The Government Operations and Elections Committee will come to order. There is a quorum. Thank you, Representative Scalzi. We will start with House File 1031. Representative Stensrud, I will move that House File 1031 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. And I see you have, is that there's an A1 or A3 amendment? Is that right? Would you like to move that as well?
Yes, please.
Okay, I'll move the A3 amendment. Do you want to tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah.
Or would it be better to just get it to pass this and then talk about the bill as a whole?
That would be great. Thank you, Madam Chair.
If that's all right with members, then all those in favor of the A3 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The motion does prevail to your bill as amended.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Yeah, House File 1031 is really an attempt to focus a lot of the reform that we've been discussing for departments in state government. And it's really, we haven't had a chance to focus on our own legislative bodies. And this is a chance to, we actually heard this bill in state government last year and met with some resistance. And we decided to go at some of the needed reform in the House and cleaning up some of our affairs and finding some efficiencies. And we did it through two ways. Just in changing some in statute and also making some, I believe we have a handout on some joint resolutions. And the A3 amendment changes, we decided to, in previous committees, we decided that a request for proposal to look at some of the GIS services, some of the mapping requests, and that would be, so we actually wrote that into statute in this amendment. Madam Chair, if I could get, I've got different versions of the joint services. And I would, if I could get the most current one. Resolutions.
Yep, yes. Please. Do you need copies or made or something, Representative Stensrud?
No, Madam Chair, I do have the right one in front of me, so I just want to make sure I was speaking to the most current version. I presented this with in state government finance, and Chair Maury Lanning agreed that he would be willing to take the joint resolutions and present those then to the LCC. And we decided, rather than mandate a lot of things through literally in statute, that we would go through the LCC and have them look at the different various services, like printing. We've got a couple different printing and duplication centers, one in the House, one in the Senate. We've got photography that's specific to the House and the Senate. We've got mail and email. They're all unique and separate. And if we're requiring the state departments to consolidate in the back office, it just seems reasonable that we should look at gaining some of those efficiencies as well in between the House and the Senate. So that's really what these resolutions do. And then regarding the specific bill, it takes out of statute specifically the postmaster and some of the sergeant-at-arms. We leave that in statute, but in the first and second sergeant-at-arms, we leave out, not that we're going to eliminate those positions, but those are really appointed at the leisure of the speaker. And if there are some more questions, I'd be happy to open up for discussion.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. I'm just kind of wondering, have you worked with the departments? For instance, have you sat down with the GIS department and the treasurer and the postmaster and assistant postmaster and worked through this with them? Are they on board rather than a top-down? Are we working from the bottom up with the people from those various departments?
Representative Stensrud.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Since last year, I've had a chance to run around a lot of different areas. I've been in all the duplication centers and in the when I started this whole process, I honestly thought we had post offices, but in when you get down to specifically, people thought we had a post office, really just a mail room.
Right.
It makes sense. Yeah, I have talked with the administration. I've also talked with we've had conversations with Mingio, and I met yesterday with John Albrecht, and I was up late last night at different committee hearings, and I can't remember which department John is in.
Are you looking for testifiers?
Yeah.
John Eichten?
John Eichten, yes.
Welcome to the committee. If you could just identify yourself again.
Madam Chair and members, I'm John Eichten with the Office of Enterprise Technology. It's here to confirm we did meet with Representative Stensrud, and I've had conversations with David Albright from Mingio Services regarding this bill, and we're interested to see the RFP if it's issued and to respond accordingly. We do feel that, and David perhaps could speak to this more directly, that the services that Mingio provides could potentially look at responding to this RFP and providing those services for the legislature as well.
Thank
if there's
you.
Any more questions related to the Mingio services in particular, I would defer to David. He's the director of Mingio. It's currently under the Department of Administration, but come July 1st, we'll be transferring to the Office of Enterprise Technology, so hence our involvement at this time.
Thank you. Did Mr. Albright want to testify? Good morning, and if you could just identify yourself.
Good morning. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm David Arbeit, not
Arbeit.
Albright, but
Arbeit.
Arbeit is good enough. I'm the State Geospatial Information Officer and Direct Mingio. I've had a chance to review the bill as in the latest version, and I'm fully confident that Mingio can provide competitive services as specified in the bill, and I'm perfectly comfortable with the idea of it going out for an RFP as well. Our role is to coordinate GIS services statewide, particularly in the executive branch, and we work closely with the legislative GIS office on a number of issues, and there's nothing in here that seems inappropriate to us, and I think we would really welcome the opportunity to coordinate services provided to the legislature with those that we provide to other agencies and state government.
Thank you. Representative Scalzi, did you have any follow-up questions? Is there anyone else that has questions for Representative Stensrud? Or anybody else from the audience that wanted to testify? Seeing no questions or anyone wanting to testify, I will renew my motion that House File 1031 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail. Thank you, Representative Stensrud.
Thank you, Madam.
Next on our list is House File 2339, Representative Gutwald.
Morning, Madam Chair and members.
Good morning, Representative.
You want to move the bill, or have you done that already, Madam?
I have not. General Register?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Representative Murray?
Madam Chair, I would move that House File 2339 be recommended to pass and placed on the General Register.
So moved. To your bill, Representative Gutwald.
Madam Chair and members, this is what was described in our health care reform committee as a big idea. Representative Liebling, in fact, put that out there. And This is a big idea. I would point out that this bill, by the way, is not a fait accompli. It doesn't mean that we're part of a multi-state compact. It's the beginning of the conversation with the federal government. What we would do is file an application along with other states to Congress for permission to form a multi-state compact. By the way, this is done in many other areas of our economy. There are a couple hundred different compacts that have been formed, multi-state compacts, under federal law. And we would be seeking permission from Congress to create a multi-state compact around health care. But with that, if Congress approves it, what that allows us to do is continue a Minnesota approach to health care reform in any mode we want. It block grants federal dollars for all health care back to 2010 levels, but block grants that money to us and allows us the freedom to do it the way that we want. And we have seen over the last several years a lot of requests on both sides of the aisle for waivers. Waivers from Medicaid to try to do things differently and better here in Minnesota. And this is kind of the ultimate global waiver, if you will. I've talked to a number of people about this who think, Minnesota really is a leader in the nation and could do a much better job if we could cut some of the strings that are attached, some of the silos that we have right now under federal rules and regulations under Medicaid and other programs. So it is a big idea, but we've been talking about this for a number of years, and the multi-state compact gives Minnesota the ability to chart a Minnesota path. We think it's a very good idea. Again, this bill simply says that Minnesota is going to join with some other states in asking Congress for permission, and then Congress would have to rule on that, and then you get in the process of how you implement this. Madam Chair, I have a testifier who I think we're trying to try. Oh, he's behind me now. Let's hear from Mr. Tripp if we could.
Sounds good. Well, and welcome to the committee. And what was your name again, if you could just identify yourself?
My name is Dan Tripp. I'm with the Healthcare Compact Alliance.
T-R-I-P-P?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I know you have a lot on your agenda this morning. I'm not going to add too much to what Representative Gottwalt said, because he's done a pretty thorough job of explaining the bill. The goal of the Healthcare Compact Alliance nationally is to organize the states in such a way that we can have more say-so in the healthcare debate that's currently going on in Washington. We believe the states are good places for healthcare policy to be discussed, debated, and implemented. We think the legislative bodies know better what their citizens need than the bureaucracies in Washington. So we wholeheartedly support House File 2339. And I'll be happy to answer any technical questions with Representative Gottwald.
Okay. Thank you very much. Representative Gottwald, are you done with your presentation, or do you have any other testifiers?
Well, Madam Chair, we'll stand for questions.
Okay. Anybody have any questions at this point? Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. I guess it's up to me and Representative Nelson here this morning to ask the questions of the loyal minority. I'm just wondering, and maybe you can tell us, how would this health care alliance coordinate with the Affordable Care Act? How would it, if we don't provide what we're supposed to provide, then the federal government's going to provide it for us? And are we going to be in court? I guess, how do these two mesh together?
Representative Gottwald.
Madam Chair, Representative Scalzi, it's a very good question. I've had that from a lot of people. The reality is this, under federal law, allows us in a very legal way, in a way that would be very fine with Congress, and like I said, it's a federal construct that allows for these multi-state compacts. It allows us to be exempt from those rules coming down from Washington. Now, if there are portions of the ACA that Minnesota decides it wants to do or feels it's already doing, we can make that decision. We can choose those things that work for us and move Minnesota forward. It's really an amazing device because it block grants the federal funds to the state and then allows the states with some. Now, the one thing I haven't mentioned is that as we go to Congress and request permission, Congress can set some rules about, well, okay, we're willing to block grant dollars to Minnesota. We want to let you kind of chart a Minnesota path. These other states would be able to do their own path. But here are some things that we want to see you do. So they could put some requirements on it, and they might look a little like that, and they might not. But Minnesota gets to choose that. It isn't that we're being told we have to do all of these things. And as you know, there are a lot of unanswered questions about the ACA right now and a lot of concerns about various impacts. It puts us more in charge. So it isn't necessarily, it's not a stick in the eye to the ACA. It's a different approach for Minnesota to decide what it wants to do.
Okay. Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. And then would it affect any type of federal dollars that come into Minnesota for all of our various programs that we have that may be tied to the health care exchange or whatever? That's what I'm a little concerned about.
Representative Gutwald.
Madam Chair, my understanding is we would be block granted dollars, the federal funding for programs right now, you know, a couple billion to Minnesota would be coming from the federal government to us, and we decide how we spend it. Now, the subsidies that you referred to, I'm not sure of. Maybe Dan could speak to that.
This, Madam Chair.
Mr. Tripp.
This would not have anything to do with the health care exchange dollars that come out of Washington, as far as I'm concerned. And the health care compact is policy neutral, so it doesn't prescribe who's covered, what's covered. This is really a debate about who decides. And we think Minnesota should decide. So this should not affect any health care exchange dollars, and this doesn't undermine the health care exchange in any way.
Representative Scalzi, did you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Well, I'm just kind of wondering, are we looking at sort of a when you say who decides, it would be a compact, so it would be other states deciding with us. Am I misunderstanding that?
Representative Gutwald.
Madam Chair, Representative Scalzi, that was my when this idea was first brought to me, I thought that too. What are we going to we're going to have to sit down with all these other states and decide things for ourselves? What's amazing about the compact is it's a group of states asking for freedom from the federal government to do their own thing, but they each get to decide. So the other states that join with us are joining with us to ask permission. But if that permission is granted, Minnesota gets to do its own thing. We don't have to go to the other states and ask for permission or negotiate with these other states to get things done, which I think is another really promising aspect about this. We are so proud of what we do as Minnesota, and that's not to say that what the federal government is trying to do is wrong, but it's saying Minnesota should choose, you know, what works for us and not necessarily have to take everything lock, stock, and barrel from the federal government. So that's a very good question, though. Minnesota would retain control over its own destiny under whatever rules we negotiate with Congress.
Okay, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And frankly, Representative Scalzi asked my questions.
Thank you. Representative Beard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Gottwald, I'm going to get some questions from a member who now can talk all day long about energy or transportation policy with you, but this one, I'm trying to come up to speed quickly because you've dropped a couple of buzzwords that I've been reading in the press and getting hundreds of emails about. One is the insurance exchange, and now you're talking about here about a healthcare compact. Can you give me the layman's quick understanding about what the difference is and what I'm listening to you talk about here?
Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Beard for the question. The exchange, I don't want to get in the weeds too far, but the health insurance exchange is a concept that is over 20 years old in Minnesota. We've talked about it for years. The idea of a place, a central place that people can go on an apples-to-apples basis to look at health care coverages and purchase them. The reality for Minnesota is we already have these things available. In fact, I'm working right now to set up a show where we can actually present to lawmakers and anybody else who wants to show up how many of these are currently available in Minnesota where you can do online purchasing of health care coverage in comparison and all that. So. But the exchange in the under the ACA is much more than that. It is the place where you will now regulate all health care and regulate benefits, regulate costs, regulate subsidies, regulate public programs as well as private programs. It becomes the central place for all things health care. There is some concern about whether or not that's something we should guide as a state or whether that's something the federal government should guide. The multi-state compact is a construct used in numerous other places within our economy to kind of free ourselves from federal rules or regulations and allow states to do what they do best. We think in healthcare, Minnesota, again being a national leader, deserves that opportunity. And so if we decide to do an online shopping tool, or we decide to move forward with the many reforms we've put in place over the last several years, we can do that ourselves, and the federal government participates with its funding. And we think that's a really potent idea for moving Minnesota forward in health care.
Representative Beard.
And thank you, Madam Chair. Okay, Representative, I'm Gottwald. I'm, of course, automatically comparing it in my head to the multi-state passenger rail compact. We have several things we do in energy with 8 or 9 other states and so on. So I'm kind of drawing parallels to that, and I understand how that works. In this case, though, we talk about it gives us the freedom then to make up our own rules and set our policy as a state. I'm trying to divine why we would need to be in a compact to do that, unless it's because Congress won't let us do it ourselves, but if we band together with others, they'll let us do it as a small group. Is that a correct divination of what's going on here?
Representative Gottwald.
Madam Chair, Representative Beard, that is true. I mean, there's an awful lot of concern about the federal government dictating to a state that is already the leader in the nation some terms that we think will actually move us backwards or potentially make commitments we can't keep, which has been a problem in the healthcare area both nationally and in the state for a while. So you're absolutely right. The concern here is Minnesota wants to chart a Minnesota path, and we're going to need relief and some permission from Congress to get out from under that.
Representative Beard.
But succinctly, Madam Chair, Representative Gottwald, you're saying we can't do that on our own. We need to be in a compact to do that. Is there some sort of congressional approval that comes with compactness that doesn't come with states individually standing alone? Mm-hmm. You follow my question? Why the need for the compact legislation, enabling legislation? Not that compacts are bad. Like I said, I've seen them work well in other arenas of endeavor. Why particularly here?
Representative Gottwald?
Madam Chair and Representative Beard, and I'll ask our testifier to lob in here too, but we have heard conversations already on the House floor here in Minnesota about, well, you know, you're in violation of federal law. Are you talking about another civil war, seceding from the Union? These things make all of us uncomfortable because I don't think any of us are interested in those sorts of things. This is one approach to obtaining flexibility for Minnesota under what's currently happening in Washington that is absolutely legal. It's under the Constitution. It's not a poke in the eye. It's working with the tools that are available to us in our democracy to obtain flexibility for Minnesota in the area of health care. So that's why we're looking at this mechanism. It's not, you know, this is not where we're just going to stand here and wait for the federal government to fight it out with us. We're actually going to use a tool we have at our disposal under the Constitution and try to accomplish flexibility for Minnesota. I don't know if I'm answering your question right or not.
Not exactly, Madam.
Representative Beard.
Sure. Perhaps the testifier caught the gist of the question and can address it.
Mr. Tripp.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Representative, you're right. Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution allows states, with the approval of Congress, to enter into compacts.
Okay.
So the interstate compact is the legal construct that we use to get the approval from Congress. When it comes to the governance of it, of the compact, there is an advisory commission that's set up. Each state is allowed to put 2 members on that advisory commission. It collects best practices, and it serves as a clearinghouse for the states. Any opinions or decisions that come out of the advisory commission are advisory, non-binding. In terms of the governance of the effects of the interstate compact, every state has the sovereignty to then go off on their own and set their own health care policy once they've been given approval by Congress. There's no bureaucracy that's built up in the interstate compact telling states what to do for health care policy. Every state has the sovereignty to make their own health care decisions. So it is a legal construct set up on the front end to be able to get that congressional approval.
Thank you, to the testifier. Thank you. That's what I was looking for. Now you're helping me understand what's going on behind it. Appreciate that.
Representative Nelson was next on the list. We'll go to Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Gottwald, I'd just like to follow up on Representative Beard's questions. If Congress has to approve this, they might just as well approve a repeal or partial repeal of the Affordable Care Act. And if the states have each their own authority to regulate health care in their state, essentially that means that Congress is voluntarily giving up its interstate commerce or other constitutional role in regulating health care. So if Congress is going to agree to that, why would we ever want to have a compact with other states with an advisory commission? What purpose does that serve if we're going to have to get congressional approval to do any of this anyway?
Representative Gottwald.
Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, it's a good question, but as we mentioned earlier before you arrived, the compact does not require the states to get together and make up their own rules, and I understand Congress might have some heartburn over relinquishing control. That's the question. This bill really doesn't say that we are going to do a compact. It says we're going to go to Congress and request permission. And then Congress has to decide whether it's willing to do that. If they are, it's going to allow the states within the compact the flexibility to take block-granted federal dollars and decide how those are spent to meet the health care needs of Minnesotans. I think that's the general idea here. I don't know if I'm answering your question or not.
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, Representative Gottwald, what I don't understand is what value the compact provides. If the Congress is going to give up authority and give up on the Affordable Care Act, we don't really need a compact because then the states will be in that position anyway. So I don't really know what the compact actually does as a value add. If Congress is willing to take this step, Minnesota would just be on its own anyway.
Representative Gottwald.
Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, what Congress is going to do is part of the problem here. We don't know what they're going to do. We don't know if they'll eliminate the ACA, if they're going to take parts of it. The point all along here, at least the idea I'm proposing by bringing this bill forward, is Minnesota is a leader in the nation. I think we can all pretty much agree on that. We do better than almost anybody else. And there are very compelling arguments that a federalized approach to health care is, in fact, going to move Minnesota backwards. It might move other states in the nation forward, but might move Minnesota backwards. We would like to have the conversation with Congress about, look, since Minnesota is a leader, can we have permission, along with some other states, to have the flexibility to use the federal dollars in a way we think is best? Now, maybe we'd adopt some of the things that are being proposed in Washington, and maybe we wouldn't. But that has certainly been my theme as a leader on health care in this legislature, is to try to chart a Minnesota path. This is one very legal federal construct under the Constitution that would allow us to do that. So that's the proposal here. If Congress is going to undo the ACA, I don't know that they are. And if they only do it in part, maybe parts of it that they keep are things we'd just as soon have flexibility over. This allows us the ultimate flexibility if they're willing to give us the permission.
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, Representative Gottwald, I mean, I don't really know that entering the compact gives us more flexibility or gives us a better or stronger claim to have the chance to do what we want with federal health care dollars. And it creates a number of, there's a number of statements made in here regarding, well, I guess maybe sovereignty doesn't appear in here, but we have an advisory commission and a pledge and so forth. And I just don't know that the state of Minnesota actually gets anything. If we want, we could sue the federal government to try to say the ACA is unconstitutional, or we could ask for a waiver, or we could ask for legislation to allow us, to, along with other states, to leave. But the compact doesn't really aid in any of those things, it seems to me. It's almost, or maybe it does. I mean, maybe this is a little bit like a union of states getting together and deciding that they want to negotiate as a block with the federal government because it would give them a more level playing field. And so maybe it's kind of a collective bargaining kind of compact, and maybe that is a good idea. I'm not sure.
Representative Gottwald.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Winkler, again, you weren't in the room when we talked about it, but this doesn't cede power to a group of states. It cedes power to the states individually. The compact is a group of states that go to seek flexibility from the federal government. If it is granted, those states individually set up their own rules, individually, not collectively, individually. The advisory committee, as our testifier mentioned a moment ago, is simply there to pull together some best practices and make some advice to the states in general about things they might or might not do. But it would be entirely up to Minnesota what things of those we adopt or don't adopt. And we are block granting the federal dollars to the state of Minnesota. You can't get more flexible than this. I mean, I don't know what other device you would have or recommend, Representative Winkler, that would give us more control over federal dollars and the way those dollars are spent to meet Minnesotans' health care needs.
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, Representative Gottwald, maybe I can just simplify it by saying, because the compact does so little, the need for the legislation is really minuscule.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, if you mean that by cutting all of the strings from federal government and block granting those dollars to the state and allowing us to do pretty much what we need or want to do with it as minuscule, then I'll accept that.
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, Representative Gottwald, maybe I'll say it another way. There's nothing the compact does that Minnesota can't do on its own anyway. Petition Congress for an escape clause from the ACA. That's essentially all this is. And we could do it on our own, or we could do it with an interstate compact. But the compact doesn't aid our ability to petition Congress for an escape clause from the Affordable Care Act.
Mr. Tripp.
I don't want to be argumentative on this point. I mean, before you got in the room, Representative Gottwald talked about this being a big idea, and it really is a big idea. States individually have absolutely no leverage when it comes to health care policy. We go to the federal government for waivers. Maybe we get it, maybe we don't. Maybe the waiver has a bunch of strings that we can or can't do. Individually, we have absolutely no leverage. What the value of the compact is it bands states together. It creates political pressure, policy pressure on Congress to listen to the states. Once they approve that compact, the states then have sovereignty to act in accordance with that compact. This is not anti-ACA. This is not an escape clause for ACA. This is to restore state sovereignty and allow states to become partners in solving the health care problems that the federal government is mired in.
Okay, we're going back and forth on the same argument. Somebody gets the last word, and I'd like to have the author have the last word, but if you'd like one more crack at it, Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, Representative Gottwald, either this gives maximum flexibility to Minnesota, in which case we can do it on our own, or this is a big idea in healthcare with a compact of states, in which case it's a form of collective bargaining, or another version of federal health care anyway. You kind of can't have it both ways in your line of argument. Maybe you want to rename this the Magic Act like that other one we have.
Representative Gottwald, you are the author, so I'll give you the last word on this argument.
Well, I think Representative Winkler is wrong. I think he's misunderstanding. Collective bargaining suggests that you get together and you bargain terms and rates and rules and all that sort of stuff together. This is simply a group of states going to the federal government and saying, cut the strings. Give us the money. Let us decide how to spend it. That's very different from a collective bargaining arrangement.
Okay, Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. I'm wondering if every state, and we'd have the power to have a different health care system, wouldn't that make health care more expensive, especially as we're reimbursed from the federal government? It just seems that if we're in a compact, but we're all going our own separate ways, it sounds to me like it would be more expensive in the end.
Representative Gottwald.
Madam Chair, Representative Scalzi, that may appear to be the case for some people, but I would argue, and I think many healthcare experts in the state could tell you, that if Minnesota's block granted the federal dollars, I am convinced that we would do a much better job. We would be much more efficient, much more effective in serving the people of Minnesota. And each state would have the opportunity to do that. Again, this is a conversation with Congress. They may set up some rules, they may not, but the flexibility for Minnesota to do a Minnesota path would definitely be good. And I'm really thinking more about Minnesota. I'm convinced that with those dollars block granted, we could end up doing a much better job. We've seen many bills go through the legislature recently, whether it's a group of people representing people with disabilities, people from nursing homes. They're trying to set up different models that they know work to deliver care at a lower cost and higher quality, and their frustration is the dollars from the federal government don't flow that way. And so we're saying, give us the federal dollars, let us decide that. And I'm convinced we do a much better job for less cost for Minnesotans.
Representative Scalzi.
And who? Which are the other states that would be in this compact? Which ones are? Is it being proposed in so we can kind of get a handle on? Is it Mississippi? Is it Wisconsin? Who is it?
Representative Gottwald.
There are, I believe, four or five, and maybe Mr. Tripp can list them out for you, but there may be others that are added. It's kind of agnostic. You could have Alaska, you could have Hawaii, you could have, you know, any state that wants to go this route could participate in the group that goes to Congress and asks for this permission.
Representative Scalzi.
But who has done it so far?
Mr. Tripp.
Last year, we had four states join the health care compact: Missouri, Georgia, Oklahoma, and Texas. This year, we are working through the legislature in about 11 or 12 states. Last week, Indiana and Utah adopted the compact, and it's sitting on the governor's desk. We've got about eight or nine other states that are working through the process like Minnesota.
Representative Scalzi.
And could you tell me who's pushing this and where you're from? I sense from your accent that you don't sound Minnesotan to me, so I'm just kind of wondering where you're from and who's pushing this.
Representative Gottwald.
Madam Chair, Representative Scalzi, if I could jump in here. We had this exact same question in our committee, and I think we allowed it at the time. I mean, it's fine. We can talk about this, and we'll answer the question. But, I mean, we should be focusing on the merits of the bill, not, you know, Mr. Tripp's here really is simply an expert testifier. I mean, I'm the author of the bill. This is my bill. It's a great idea. It works with the federal government. If we like it, great. If we don't, you know how you want to vote.
Mr. Tripp?
I'm National Field Director for the Healthcare Compact Alliance. We're a 501c3 for nonprofit based in Virginia.
Let's hear you say Minnesota. Well, no, then. Okay, we'll move on. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess my original question wasn't that, but I guess the question about who funds the compact or the group that you work for is in some ways it goes to whether looking at the bill. I mean, when we see bills and we can say this. Just read them on their surface and see what they are, but sometimes knowing who's pushing them and who's behind them gives you an idea. You know, when you're looking at them, an idea who's got about what the bias there is, and so when you can judge that bias and maybe it's still a good idea, but so you know where it's coming from. I mean, if it's a bunch of healthcare organizations that are looking to make a lot of money off it and they're pushing something, or sometimes stuff from the AFL-CIO gets questioned. I get that thrown at me all the time. Well, it's just the AFL-CIO. That's because you support them and dismiss what they're saying. But I like to look at where stuff comes from so that I know how it is. But I've already got the answer that we're not going to get that answer. But I guess the question
Madam Chair, I'm going to disagree with Representative Nelson if I can. We're willing to give you any answer along those lines you want. My point about that, Representative Nelson, is we're not here to impugn motives. This is what it is. Going with a group of states to ask for permission from the federal government is all federal law. There's no specific group that's gaming the system or putting language in this law that helps them or doesn't help them. It helps Minnesota. The block grant gives us freedom as a legislature, really, to decide our future. There's nobody who's gaming the system at all. I mean, they think it's a good idea. I think it's a good idea. That's really the only reason we're here. I haven't even looked into, is there a bunch of money coming into this? You know, this is a group of states that would go to the federal government and ask for that flexibility. It's a big idea. It's a general idea. And it really leaves it up to Minnesota to decide what we do with it. So there's, I'm not sure who wins by this other than Minnesota.
Representative Melton.
But we'd be glad to answer any questions you want about who's behind this.
Madam Chair, like I said, I'm not saying they're gaming the system, and I'm not imputing anybody's motives. It's just that I'd like to know who's bringing something forward so I have an idea where their bias is. But that's not the question I had. The question I originally had here when I raised my hand was, we're talking here about getting waivers from the federal government, and they're not a guarantee that we're going to get those.
That's right.
We set this compact up, or we joined this compact, and the federal government says, I mean, they can say put conditions on it, like you said earlier in your testimony. Mm-hmm. But if what if they say no, we're not going to give you that waiver. You have to follow this. How does this move the ball forward so that we're complying with the Affordable Health Care Act and you know, the possibility of it needing to set up an exchange or having one imposed upon us? How does this help us if the federal government says no, we are not going to give those waivers out? And I guess the tie-in is that, has these other groups, the states that have already passed this, have they gotten those waivers?
Representative Gottwald.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Nelson, this is the beginning of the conversation, as I said at the outset. This is a request for permission. This is like this is our permission slip or request for permission slip to Congress. Then we begin that conversation. But it's a perfectly legal conversation that we can have in addition to the conversations that are already going on about what we do or don't do in Minnesota and what the ACA says about it and the questions we're trying to get from HHS. I think it's one, we talked about the global waiver a lot on the House floor last year, and there was a lot of discussion about that. Representative Abler talked about the idea of having more flexibility as a state. Wouldn't that be good for Minnesota? And in fact, wouldn't the federal government want to see us move forward in that area? I met with some people this morning in my office from Community Measurement here in Minnesota. Medicare actually uses us as an example. I mean, it's more and more the nation looks to us rather than the other way around. So I don't know that this is perpendicular to the ACA or what's going on in Washington. It's parallel. You know, if that conversation with Congress results in us getting the flexibility, I'm convinced we'd do a great job for Minnesotans. But this is the beginning of that conversation. We don't know what Congress would say. They might say no. They might say no.
So, Madam Chair.
Representative Nelson.
So where do we go from here if they say no? And I guess the other question I had, and I might just escape my mind, but the other piece, part of the question I had asked earlier, what happens if they do say no? Where do we go from there?
Representative Gottwald.
Madam Chair, Representative Nelson. If they say no, they say no. That may be some time from now. In the meantime, we have all the work we have right before us right now. I mean, this does not change what we have to do in the meantime. But I think it's one a big idea that is worth pursuing with Congress in the meantime. Again, I think it's parallel, not perpendicular. So we've got a whole host of things we're trying to do right now, questions we're trying to get answered about how much it's going to cost Minnesota, about how much regulation is going to be imposed on Minnesota, about what rules and guidelines. Every week we try to look to HHS for answers on this stuff. We're going to keep doing that. All of that's got to continue while we ask for this permission.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Gottwald, I did my other question. Have these other states that have already passed this legislation, have they gotten a waiver? Where are they in that waiver process?
Representative Gottwald.
Madam Chair, Representative Nelson, it's a good question about process, and I'll maybe have Mr. Tripp lob in from his perspective, but my understanding is as each of these states pass it, it's like, okay, your membership is 4, it might grow to 8, might grow to 10 or 12. At some point, there's enough of them that get together and go at the same time to Congress. So they're not going individually and seeking waivers and getting them or not getting them. They go collectively.
Representative Beard.
Well, Madam Chair, I was going to say something about southern draws in Mississippi, but it would be uncharitable. So I'll just but I'm going to tell you I'm a little concerned about the parochialism I hear in the discussion, and I'll just leave it at that. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions from members at this time? I know we have a witness or two, another person that wants to speak. That's all right. Well, and Ellen Horley, thank you. You want to just come forward and then again identify yourself for the tape?
My name is Ellen Horley, and I am a citizen. I live in Eden Prairie. My comments today are representative only of my own views and no one else's. I heard the testimony in the House Health and Human Services Committee for this bill, and I noticed at that time that there were no opposing witnesses, so I decided to oppose it and act as a witness in the Senate on Wednesday night, and then I signed up to testify against it today. And one of the things that one of the comments that I heard today was that this would allow Minnesota to move forward is rather than backward. And my observations over the last several weeks, I've been observing committees in both the Senate and the House, is that the Minnesota legislature is moving us backwards all by itself. It doesn't need the federal government to help it. And I'm going to give an example of what happened with expansion of Medicaid back when we had the option to do that. The federal government says that the expansion of Medicaid will cover people who have up to 138% of the federal poverty line, that their income. But our Department of Health and Human Services was able to expand that coverage, to expand up to 250% of the federal poverty line. Those were people who had been in the past covered under Minnesota Care. And our Department of Human Services was able to expand that coverage. It was through a special procedure and special negotiation, and they were able to do that. Unfortunately, the Minnesota legislature decreased that or is going to eliminate that expanded coverage. It's going to go down to 200% of the federal poverty line. And those 7,000 people who are going to be removed from Medicaid coverage, it's $160 million that we received from the federal government to cover these people. 7,000 people on Minnesota Care. Now they're going to be given a voucher to go out and purchase purchase insurance on the private market. And that's supposed to be we're supposed to be using market forces, and they're supposed to have the better freedom and to go out on the private market. We're going to use a free market, and these people, but the problem with this approach is that when you put people out on the private market, they're vulnerable to the fact that it's usually high deductible plans that they can afford to purchase, which means that they have to avoid seeking care when they need it, because they can't afford the deductibles. So basically, then they ended up in either postponing care or going to the emergency room or something else. So the reason that Minnesota has been a low-cost state up to now is because we have put in place plans like Minnesota Care and GAMC to cover people, the working poor and low-income people, so that they stay out of the high-cost emergency room care, and they can get care, and they can maintain coverage. And the legislature is moving backwards in this regard in the state at this moment, with this current legislature in place. And we're trying to get more people off of the public plans. We're trying to throw them out into the private market. They're going to be more susceptible to high deductible plans, more susceptible to having to delay care, more instability in their health, in their ability to keep jobs, everything. And that's the wrong direction, and that's the direction that we are currently in, going in right now in this state. And so to say that this healthcare compact is going to help us move forward, when in every direction right now we are moving backwards on our own accord, under the control of the federal government right now. So I don't see any positive way that this would help us move forward when we are already moving backwards at this point in time. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else that wanted to testify for or against the bill? Did any other members have questions? Okay, seeing none, Representative Murray?
Madam Chair, I would renew my motion that House File 2339 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register.
So moved. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay?
No. No.
Motion does prevail. Thank you, Representative Gutwald.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
I don't see Representative Kiffmeyer, so we'll move on to House File 2359, Quam.
We don't need to
Oh, no, actually, he can move himself. Representative Quam, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair. I'd like to move House File 2359 be approved and moved to the General Register.
So moved, and I see that there's an amendment there. Would you like to pass that to get it in the shape that you want, or do you need to talk about it separately?
Madam Chair, yes, I would like to move House File 2359 A2 amendment to get it in the order of the author.
Okay. Anyone have any questions on that? All right, we'll go ahead and vote then. All those in favor of approval of the A2 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail, and now the bill is in the shape that you would like.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a fairly regular style bill. The Dodge County Recorder has been in this position for 26 years, announced last year that she was going to retire. No one in the department, no one has stepped forward with interest, and because a lot of the duties are more technical, there's the desire to appoint to this position and thus allowing someone with the capabilities that could carry on and do the best job, you know, could fill this position. There has been a unanimous vote by the board, Dodge County Board, to request that the legislature take the action to make this appointed. My amendment is to alleviate some of the concerns, and it basically these appointments don't have an expiration date. It's conceivable that with the churn of the county board members that they may not realize, and that a person could just have a lifetime appointment or however long they wanted it. So the intention of the amended bill is to, one, allow Dodge County, as I believe 25 other counties have done, take one of these positions and make it appointed. My litmus test is if the person does not have a vote when things come before the county board, if they don't have a vote on those issues, then we're not diluting the representation. There still are the normal standard. It can be changed back to an elective by referendum. But with the addition of the retention election, it would just say every 4 years, which is a normal term, that it would come before the voters of the county to say, yes, we think this person is doing a good job, or no, we have issues with the performance. And then it allows for progression for another appointment the following January. So that if the people say, we think it's logical that the board does appoint, they still have the right to remove this person in a retention election. Now, that doesn't take away if they really felt that they needed to move it back to being elective instead of appointive. That mechanism's still there. But I think this just allows for a reasonable look at and respect to the voters of the district. And I'm open to questions.
Representative Beard first, and then Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Quam, Representative Simon, and I have a small bill that has a retention election provision in it. I think we've been hearing lots of interesting comments about retention elections, so I'm going to be really curious to see how this works out for you. But to be clear, this isn't just a retention election for the first election cycle after the office would become appointive. You intend for them to stand for retention election every 4 years, just to be clear, is that right?
Representative Quam?
Madam Chair, Representative Beard, that's correct. That's the normal term that this office would come before the voters and the public. And so I feel it's reasonable that that's the same periodicity that they'd come up for retention election.
Follow-up.
Representative Beard.
Thank you. Representative Kwan, just because this is the great laboratory of the American experiment, I'm going to vote for it just to see it happen and see how it works out and hope I can stick around long enough to have the experience. Because I have a hunch it probably will work. At least that's, I think, what Representative Simon and I are hoping in another venue. So, thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And when I first saw this bill, I thought about Representative Westrom, who always gets up and rails against these. I know we see one or two of these every year in GovOps. And the concept of a retention election is intriguing also. But I guess the question they have about the retention election part of this is, if somebody chooses at the next general election to run for this, would they be able to file and run for this position and run against the person that's there and have a regular election, or would they, the retention election, have to go forward and then they didn't get retained in that position, they got voted out, and then they'd have to hold another election, or would somebody then be reappointed or somebody else be appointed to that position? And if they did that, could the possibility of, say, you, Representative Kwan, run for a retention election and are not retained, but then the city council or the county chooses to reappoint you to that position, could that be a possibility of something happening? I guess so. That's kind of how is this, I guess in my mind is, how is this going to work?
Representative Kwan.
Madam Chair, Representative Nelson, there would not be the option, unless the voters did the referendum, to return it to being an elective position, for someone to file and run. The retention election would run as in other states seem to have retention elections for different positions. How it is that you would have, and it has in the amendment, which is now in the bill, that there's a yes-no. And the question is, may the county board retain, place for the name, as the person appointed and responsible for the functions of, in a place for the county office title, yes or no? And it's a simple, straightforward question. Now, it also has in there that if you lose your retention election, that you have that position until January 1, and that then they would need to appoint someone else, that person would not be able to be reappointed and would have to wait for the duration of the 4 years. It's about as close as you can get to the status of an elected position and be appointed. So you've got the same periodicity. The only thing is that you can be thrown out, as any elected official can. The only difference is that the replacement then is appointed, and you can't, just as if you lost the election, you can't go back sooner than the normal term of office to try to take that position again.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess that's intriguing. I guess the other question I would have that just brings to mind here, so they're going to be appointed for a four-year term, but as an appointed position, could the, as somebody one time told me, could they be disappointed by the same county board before the end of that four-year term, and they appoint somebody else to that position? I guess that's another, I'm just trying to think of how the mechanics of this would work.
Representative Kwan.
Madam Chair, Representative Nelson, they may be relieved, they may be disappointed if they no longer are appointed. Appointed position is at the discretion of the appointing board. So there could be a change, and that's why in the language it says effective the date, first general election after the appointment. So if you're appointed, you will stand for retention the next general election. In other words, the voters get to say, hey, we approve or disapprove, but then you've got that four-year period unless the appointing body says we feel that you're not performing, or we just decided a change is needed. That's the risk you take with an appointed position.
That's all, Madam Chair. Representative Quam, I understand that Dodge County is interested in having the ability to appoint the recorder, but are they understanding and in favor of the retention election and the fact that it will happen not just once, but every 4 years?
Representative Quam.
Madam Chair, Representative Murray, yet they're aware of that. In fact, I did even talk to Representative Westrum, who also used the word intriguing, and I have not heard anyone that has been negative. I've heard a lot of that's interesting, and when I talked with the board, the impression I had was, well, that seems reasonable and logical.
Representative Murray.
Representative Quam, will that add additional costs, though, to the election process? And is it? Do you think it's really necessary to have a retention election for a recorder position on an ongoing basis?
Representative Quam.
Madam Chair, Representative Murray. Actually, that question could be asked, is it necessary to elect a recorder position? And if the answer is yes, which, the state of Minnesota has for many, many years had it elective, then therefore I see no reason to say it's not, correct to hold that election. It's at a general, so there's no special costs. And frankly, if you're adding one more name, question on the ballot, I don't foresee there being much of a additional cost. In fact, they probably just take a few moments to edit the file before they send it to the printer.
Representative Hancock.
thank you, Madam Chair. I believe Representative Murray really asked my question, although I would maybe just add, is there anyone here from Dodge County Board that would give their direct reaction to it?
Representative Paul.
Madam Chair, Representative Hamilton, there is not someone from Dodge County. They were here yesterday testifying, and it got shifted later in the day, so they spent most of the day up, and so I discussed with them, and they said if it was okay for me to handle it without them, they would prefer not to, since they have several meetings scheduled today, because they have cooperative efforts in the southeastern counties, and they've got a long-standing meeting scheduled going on.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I bet you didn't think we'd spend this much time on a bill like this. I just want to compliment you on the approach here. Now, it's true, Representative Beard and I have a bill that deals with retention elections in a different context, but those of us who have been around here a few years, we hear these bills every year, and Representative Westrum has a strong principled position against them, but just from a political standpoint, this is a really smart middle ground solution, I think. I mean, I have a bias that I've just disclosed, but I think that, I would vote for the bill if it were just pure appointment. But since Representative Westrum and others might not want that to happen, this seems like a reasonable middle ground. I would imagine, Representative Murray, in terms of costs, it's probably less of a cost than a current competitive election. Not as little of a cost, obviously, as pure appointment, but it seems to be a smart kind of compromise, and I'll be very interested to see how it works out. It gives people a veto. They can throw out a person that they whose performance they disapprove of, so it gives the people a voice, but it isn't prescriptive in the sense that you're having a competitive election for a position where it sounds like in Dodge County it's tough to find even one person to run for it. So I think it's a great experiment.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Simon, I, for some reason, don't fit in boxes very well, so I tend to think a little bit more creatively. And I was around for the last session's discussion on the bill, and so when it came up, I had this idea, went to Representative Westrom, and he was intrigued, and it sounded as if he supported this innovation. And again, I have heard no one that has been against this new way of approaching it.
Chip Fault, Representative Simon. Representative Murray.
Representative Quam, could you tell me in regard to this retention election on appointee, is this going to apply to all appointments made across the state, or is this simply going to apply to Dodge County?
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Murray. I had it crafted to be universal because I think if an idea is good, it should be evenly distributed. And I think that was part of Representative Westrom's intrigue and positive feedback on this bill.
Madam Chair.
Representative Murray.
Have we had any input from the Association of Minnesota Counties and other groups that may also then come under this retention election that aren't currently under it?
Representative Quam.
Madam Chair, Representative Murray, I have had discussions with several other counties, but I have not had a discussion with the Association of Counties. Generally, when I've been meeting with those groups and the township groups, they've been distracted by my co-authorship of a beard bill, and this has not risen to the level.
Representative Quam, I think that that many members of the committee might have more concerns about this being statewide as opposed to your own district. Perhaps Representative Dyson, or excuse me, Ms. Dyson. You may as well
please,
be a representative.
Please don't demote her for that.
I hate to demote you. Perhaps Ms. Dyson can give us some guidance on this issue and come up with some language, if that would be the will of the committee, and if you would be okay with that, Representative Quam. I just think that is a bigger issue, perhaps for a bigger deal, since this was an amendment to a very specific county. I would feel more comfortable, and I think other members would. Would you be open to us coming up with some language from Ms. Dyson to making this specific for Dodge County at this point?
Madam Chair, that would take away the intent of having this resolution, because again, as I said, if it's a good idea to allow the voters to, with the same periodicity, review a possible lifetime appointment, then why limit it to to one office?
Well, Representative Quam, I think you've opened up kind of a can of worms, and we'll let the members speak, and maybe we can get some feedback. Where should we start? Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and Representative Quam. Once again, I commend you for your outside-the-box thinking, but I think you went a bit too far outside the box for some of us. I would urge you to consider doing this as kind of a trial program in Dodge County, and to permit more restrictive language, because even though this may be a fine idea, I don't know that we're ready to extend it to the whole state right now, and it might endanger what you're trying to do.
That was more of a comment, so we'll move on to Representative Simon.
Madam Chair, I was going to just echo that. First of all, a gold star goes to Representative Murray. I didn't even see that at a point that it applied statewide. I agree. I might, at some later date, support something that's more comprehensive, but in fairness to the affected groups and associations who I'm sure would want to see this as maybe a standalone bill and not an amendment, I would strongly urge you to make it a pilot project in Dodge County, because I think, as I said before, I think it's a really smart solution to this particular issue, but before we universalize it, I think we'll want much more feedback. And since this is, we're running up, we're one day from the deadline, and there probably isn't time, I would strongly urge you to make it Dodge County specific and then work maybe next year to do something. And I'm really intrigued by its application beyond Dodge County, but I think for our purposes today, you should probably narrow the scope.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I raised my hand originally when he made the statement because I was thinking the way I read it, and then I had went and reread it, but I thought it was just specific to this, I'm intrigued by this, and I actually would support trying this out there. But the concern I have of doing it statewide is all the ones we've already allowed to appoint positions now, and they're under the impression they can appoint, and those people will serve there until they need to replace that person, and then they just appoint somebody else. Now we're changing the rules in the middle of the game or after the game's been played on them, and I would rather see this done as for Dodge County as a pilot project to see and see how this works and see if there are problems that we don't foresee with it, and if it works out, then come back at a later date and maybe then do it for statewide. But otherwise, we're going to be changing a lot of counties that have done this already have come to us with legislation to change these positions to appointed positions. Now, again, we're changing the rules on them, and there might be additional cost to them as opposed to just to Dodge County.
Did any other member want to weigh in on this issue before we get feedback from Representative Quam? Representative Quam, I believe that Representative Murray has an amendment being ready to go, and I'll let you. I'm wondering if you'd reconsider the amending your bill.
I was not saying that I would not allow an amendment. My preference would be this, but the will of the body and legislature is to improve the legislation that's brought before committee. Otherwise, we wouldn't have the amendment process, so I'm very open to hearing this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Quam, and I think that's good. This is really an interesting idea, and I just think it probably deserves more time for people to weigh in, so I appreciate your flexibility. Representative Murray, are you ready with the amendment, or does Ms. Dyson have it?
Yes, Ms. Dyson has an amendment that would limit this to Dodge County, and if I could have her explain it.
Ms. Dyson, can you report the amendment?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, the amendment would be to amend the A2 amendment so that on line 1.2, instead of page 1, line 4, it'd be page 3 after line 2, then delete lines 1.3 and 1.4. On 1.5, it would be subdivision 6, retention election on appointee. On 1.6, delete each county with a person serving as the appointee for, and delete on line 7, any office made an appointed office under section 375A.10 or special law. And then on line 1.8, after the period where it says for any office, it would be for the office made an appointed office. Because the Dodge County bill is for the Office of the Recorder. And then deleting the effective date and renumbering instructions so that the amendment, as with the proposed changes, would be adding a subdivision to the Dodge County bill that would be retention election on appointee. At the first general election after the effective date of this section, the county shall hold an election on whether to retain the person appointed to the office, for the office made an appointed office after, and et cetera.
That's a rather long amendment. Does everyone understand the amendment and the intention of the amendment? Representative Quam, do you understand the amendment? And
oh, absolutely, Madam Chair.
You're okay with it. Okay. All those in favor of the Murray oral amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Oppose, nay. Motion does prevail. Okay, we're back to your bill. And is there, I don't know if I can't remember if I opened it up to see if anybody else wanted to testify in the audience. I don't suppose. Is there any other member questions to the bill as amended? Representative Murray, would you like to renew your motion then?
Madam Chair.
I'm sorry, it was you, Representative Quam. Would you like to renew your motion?
Yes, I'd like to renew my motion for passage
of House File 2359 to the General Register?
As amended.
As amended. So moved. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay? Motion does prevail. Thank you, Representative Quam. We'll move on now to House File 2555. Morning, Representative Kiffmeyer. I will move House File 2555 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. There's a couple of amendments. One is actually my amendment. Perhaps, if it would be okay with you, perhaps you could describe the bill and then go to your amendments after you've described the bill in this instance, or would you rather
Madam Chair, if I could do the amendments, the amendment first, and that is the A6 amendment. And, Madam Chair, after that, after the A6 amendment is moved, Madam Chair, I have an amendment to my amendment.
Okay. The A6 amendment, I will move that. Please explain the amendment, Representative Kiffmeyer. It's an interesting-looking amendment. I think we need to discuss a little bit before we vote.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, in fact, I would like to ask for a motion to delete lines 1.2 to 1.13.
Okay. I will move that.
Madam Chair, I have a simpler way to deal with the need of this situation, and I have a simpler way of dealing with that than all of this language here that has been recommended to me. So if we could just delete this section, and then I would have a, when we get to the bill itself, I will have a small oral amendment.
Representative Kiffmeyer, I'm not sure you understand. I'm not sure I understand what you want me to incorporate. What were the lines that you wanted me to
on the
delete?
A6 amendment, Madam Chair,
yes.
To delete lines 1.2 on the amendment to lines 1.13. This has to do with the Council on Black Minnesotans.
1.13, okay.
Or 1.13, okay.
No,
1.12 says page 2 after line 33.
All the way down to 1.13.
Yes.
Okay, I will incorporate that amendment. Did members want to discuss this before we voted? Representative Nelson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I just would like to hear, you said you have a simpler way of doing that, and I know in the Sunset Commission we talked a lot about this, and so I would just like to know what the simpler way of doing it is, and before we vote to take this out.
I think that's a good suggestion. That's why I was hoping we could do the bill before the amendment, but go ahead, Representative Kiffmeyer, if you can explain.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Representative Nelson and committee members, in the Sunset Commission work, we have the Department of Health and the Department of Human Services on the next round of commission work. And so I also had a discussion with Mr. Donovan Bailey and with Senator Terry Bonhoff that in the work of the commission, that's a very big project. And so the goal was to try and have the Council on Black Minnesotans on their special review to come the year before. But on the bill itself, on line 3.11, it's been suggested if we just add it to the 2013 Sunset Advisory Commission review schedule, that that might be a simpler way of just making sure we get to their review. And it was just a managing of the work project itself. And Madam Chair, if we want to leave the language as 2014, it is something that I'm just trying to, we've tried to be helpful to managing the work of the commission, but if it stayed at 2014, I just wanted to be sure that they got the attention that they deserved and didn't get lost in the middle of the two great big agencies.
Representative Nelson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would Representative Kiffmeyer, would that then necessitate changing on 3.15 the dates there to 2012? And then 2013.
Madam Chair, I think that would be a good to have the same year in regards to there. That's why we have the audit scheduled for December 1st was so that we could do that work, but...
And Madam Chair,
I
was just whispering in my ear that we also want to change on line 3.10 the 2 years to 1 year.
Representative Giffmeyer?
Madam Chair, I would accept that from Representative Nelson.
I mean, maybe Mr. Shepherd would want to weigh in on this, but just I'm just looking at this, and if with that that's the case, if you just want to go a one-year extension and then do it next year to make sure that all those dates line up, I guess.
Mr. Shepherd?
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, Representative Nelson and Representative Giffmeyer, if you added back in all of the technical suggestions that Representative Nelson just suggested, you'd be back to lines 1.2 to 1.13 of the A6 amendment. So if that were the committee's intent, you might want to leave the A6 amendment as it is. You've added back in everything that you just took out.
Representative Nelson.
That's why I was asking what we intended to do. If that's what Mr. Shepherd said is right, then I don't think we need to take out line 1.12, 1.13, because that's what it accomplishes.
Madam Chair, it just looks way more difficult when it's stated in that sort of way. So it just seemed easier to take it from the original bill language to just tie it into that. But yes, it does look more complicated. But if Mr. Shepherd says it accomplishes what you have said, Representative Nelson, I'm fine with leaving those lines back in.
Okay. Before I finish incorporating the amendment I've moved, I think I'll take a couple questions in case there's any other clarity. Mm-hmm. Representative McFarlane.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Kiffmeyer. I've served on the Council of Minnesota Black Minnesotans as legislative liaison since 2007. In fact, I probably have the most seniority on the whole committee. I've watched three boards flip. I know they have issues. They took care of it when they released their executive director last winter. I know they're still having issues, but to turn around by 2013, by the end of this year, and have the Sunset Commission respond to this by 2013, I don't know if that's being fair to them. At their meeting on Tuesday night, we brought forward what was in the original bill or the latest engrossment, and they knew they had a lot of work, but they were ready for the challenge and moving forward, and I think moving it up is... fair to them. If we're doing it because the Sunset Commission schedule is going to be busy in 2014, I don't think that's the appropriate reason. Representative Moran was at the meeting with me on Tuesday night and read the parts of the Sunset Commission report and the proposed legislation. They all knew they were ready to address this issue, and they felt that they could do it within that, knowing that they had to really buckle down and they needed some help. I think moving this up one full year is not going to be helpful. So it's my opinion.
Madam Chair, Representative McFarland, and I think that Representative Nelson and I would agree. We want to do what's best by the Council of Black Minnesotans, give them every opportunity to do that, and also to give them the fair attention. I want to give them every opportunity. And so, Madam Chair, Representative Nelson, if we just revert back to 2014, the commission can manage its work, and we want to give every opportunity to them. I am fine with that. We are just making an effort here to do that, and I did have a conversation with Mr. Bailey and all of that, but I think that was before, and I know they have a lot of communicating. Mm-hmm. And a lot of things to work on, and so I'm fine, Madam Chair, with just leaving it as 2014, and Representative Nelson will just manage our work and give them the attention they deserve, and maybe by then it'll be going so smoothly it will not be an issue.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I guess.
So, Madam Chair.
Representative Nelson.
So, if I'm hearing Representative Kiffmeyer, what she's saying, then she just wants to leave it as is in the original bill. So then when we adopt the A6 amendment, we should adopt it striking lines 1.2 to 1.13, I guess.
I'll ask Mr. Shepherd. I want to make sure this is right before I continue to incorporate it. So I'll go through member questions first. Representative Winkler had a question, and then once that's done, then we'll turn it over to Mr. Shepherd for his advice on what the amendment should be.
Madam Chair, my questions are about the second page.
of the amendment?
Yeah, of the amendment.
Okay.
Yes. So I don't know if you're ready, if you want to continue.
Why don't you go ahead and ask, and then we'll turn it over to Representative Kiffmeyer to explain.
Yeah. Representative Kiffmeyer, I'm a little confused about this. My simplistic understanding of the Sunset Advisory Commission is to evaluate agencies to determine whether there's a continued public need for them, to determine whether they should be moved into a different agency or reorganized, or to improve their operations. But it seems to me that when we get into the question of ordering the Board of Medical Practice to convene a working group to ensure that it protects the safety and well-being of the citizens of the state, that's more just like an ordinary bill that should come through HHS. It's not really a report from the Sunset Commission. And then that, you know, that also caused me to look at Section 22 of the bill on page 10, creating authority to provide, to require background checks, which I'm actually co-author in a bill related to the nursing board, so it's not that I don't support it. It's just it seems to me that this bill is starting, and with this amendment, even further, looking like an omnibus government reform bill as opposed to a sunset bill. And it seems like it's a little bit past the scope of this of the commission. So I wonder if you could help to convince me that that's the role of the Sunset Commission.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Madam Chair and Representative Winkler, the scope of the duties of the Sunset Advisory Commission were beyond, yes, you continue to function, and no, you don't. It was efficiencies and duplications and other things like that. And, Madam Chair, you well know what the Sunset Advisory Commission duties are, and so I hesitate to speak here in regards to your knowledge of what this bill requires, and it might be better suited to you.
Representative Kiffmeyer and Representative Winkler, I would agree. I mean, the scope, I don't have the language of the Sunset Commission, but the idea was to look at duplication and overlapping and looking at all the agencies and boards and seeing what we could do. And I will just say that Representative Kiffmeyer, Representative Nelson, and the other members of the board and I spent many, many hours looking at a lot of different things, and this is one of the things that we looked at and decided as a group was important to delve into a little further.
And Madam Chair, I have a question for Mr. Shepherd.
Okay.
Mr. Shepherd, what happens if we don't pass this bill at all, if we don't pass any kind of sunset bill, if there are no sunsets?
Mr. Shepherd?
Madam Chair and Representative Winkler, the sunset law for these agencies provide that the agencies do expire as on June 30th, 2012. So if no bill passed this year, the groups that were in Schedule 1 would expire. The law, Minnesota Statute 3D.15, gives agencies another year to basically wind up their business. And if the legislature did not pass a bill in that year, then the functions and duties would be transferred to the Commissioner of Administration.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's Mr. Shepherd. So the first group would be sunsetted if we don't take any action. And I'm sure we'll get to this, but are we creating another group of agencies to sunset automatically if we don't take further action? Because I feel like we have agencies held hostage to a bill whose scope I think is questionable. But so do we create another set of sunsets in the current bill draft?
Mr. Shepherd?
Madam Chair and Representative Winkler, no. The current law has a schedule of sunset review that there are six different clusters of groups that continue through June of 2022. The only new sunset in this bill is, if you look on page 2, line 28 of the bill, the agencies that are scheduled for sunset on June 30th, 2012 that are continued under this bill would then be sunset 12 years from now. In other words, the cycle would start over. So this would, in that sense, it's a new sunset, but the rest of the sunsets are all already written into the law. I should note that all of the groups that are scheduled for review and that were reviewed by the commission this year actually do expire as provided. The law says that cabinet-level agencies will be reviewed, but they don't expire. So in Group two next year, the Department of Health, Department of Human Services, Department of Education, if no bill passes in 2014, those cabinet-level agencies will not expire. Only the more minor groups expire.
Representative Winkler.
So, Madam Chair, Mr. Shepherd, so there is another group of boards or commissions that are sub-cabinet level that will expire if we don't take action in future years.
Correct. Mr. Shepherd.
Yes.
On a schedule. It's a schedule, Representative Winkler. So if the legislature wants these agencies and boards that were up for review to continue, then we need to take action.
Okay. Well, I hope someday we can get rid of this scope because it's getting into questions of conducting background checks is very much a policy choice and not at all a government efficiency issue.
Representative Winkler, we are the legislature, so we are free to change the language if we don't like the language. This is an advisory commission. These are the recommendations, and we are free. As you'll see, I have myself have an amendment that I will be offering later. So we do have the opportunity to make changes. If you feel that this is the recommendations have gone farther than you think you're comfortable with, then you're free to offer an amendment yourself or do whatever you like. We're not bound by the recommendations of the Sunset. That's just because they spent hours looking at it. These are just their recommendations. And we, of course, are the legislature, and it's in our purview to change it. So you are free to vote against this if you feel the scope is too far. Do what you will as a legislator. You do have an election certificate.
Thanks for that reminder, Madam Chair.
Anytime I can help out, Representative Winkler. Do you have additional questions on the amendment?
Well,
Representative Winkler?
I don't really know that there's much point. I would like to take out the Medical Practice Act section, but I suspect that there probably won't be strong bipartisan support for that, so I don't think there's any point in offering it.
Representative Kiffmeyer, did you want to comment?
No, Madam Chair.
Any other
set of motion?
Okay, any other questions on this amendment?
Madam Chair.
Representative Nelson.
I don't know if this is on the amendment or the bill, but Representative Winkler brought up a thought to mind here. And I guess the intention on the Council of Black Minnesotans, we're putting them in the group 2 years from now. Would it be the intention after the review 2 years from now, putting them back in with the group that they're currently in so that they would be 2024 and going forward on that so that we're not jumbling that all up?
Yeah. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Nelson, that would be the good suggestions for the next legislature or the Sunset Commission upon review that they should do so.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, any other questions to the amendment or anyone that feels the need to speak to the amendment? Then I'm going to have Mr. Shepherd clarify the amendment.
The amendment to the amendment, Madam Chair, first.
We're on the A6 amendment, and I think Mr. Shepherd has an understanding of what you are trying to accomplish in your amendment, and I would like him to clarify so that we make sure for the record that we know exactly what we're voting on, and that's very clear. And I think the best person to do that in the room is Mr. Shepherd.
Madam Chair and members, the committee was having a discussion earlier of having the Council on Black Minnesotans sunset in 2014, not 2013. And if that were the intent of the committee, I would suggest if you look at the A6 amendment to delete from that amendment lines 1.2 through 1.6. And then I would suggest leaving line 1.7 of the amendment as is, because that's a different issue. That relates to a study of the combative sports group that's already been completed. And then, Madam Chair, pick up on line and delete lines 1.8 through lines 1.13. And if that were done and this amendment were adopted, then the original language of the bill that provides that the Council of Black Minnesotans would be in the 2014 sunset schedule would remain intact, and that is what would then occur.
Madam Chair, I agree with Mr. Shepherd in regards to the lines that apply to the Council of Black Minnesotans. The line 1.7, page 3, delete section 6. I would want to delete that also and keep that in there because that has to do with the study to be done by March 15th. That has already been done, so it's no longer necessary. And that's why I would keep in line 1.7 on the A6 amendment as a part of the deletion, but for a different reason other than the Council on Black Minnesotans language.
Mr. Shepherd?
Madam Chair, yes, I think Representative Kiffmeyer has confirmed my understanding of her intent. So if with reference to A6, just delete lines 1.2 through 1.6 and then delete 1.8 through 1.13.
I see.
And that would I do what I think the committee intends with the Council on Black Minnesotans. And then she would continue to offer the remainder of the A6 amendment.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, that is correct.
Kiffmeyer. And maybe you mentioned this. I'm just curious, did we look at this in the Sunset Commission? I don't recall, and I'm just wondering why you're offering this after the Sunset Commission. Have you spoken with Representative or Senator Bonoff about this amendment as well, and the senators? I'm just if you could just refresh my memory about why this is coming in late.
Madam Chair, it's been a long week. Just Monday morning when I think it was Monday morning of this week when we were together in the Sunset Commission, we did have this report by the Office of the Legislative Audit. It was presented to the Sunset Advisory Commission, and that was early Monday morning. And so we did receive this report to the Sunset Commission on that day, and the commission at that time decided to not merge and to leave the Amateur Sports Commission as it was constructed, and also to not be sunset. And so that report was received by the Sunset Advisory Commission, and they did review it. And I am making this recommendation in line with that Sunset Advisory Commission review of this Section 6, which we did on Monday. And so subsequent to that, I am making that recommendation to you in the legislature, and this amendment follows with that.
And then does that include the Medical Practice Act, too? I don't
know.
Sorry,
Madam Chair. Madam Chair, the only thing I'm referring to right now is the Combat of Sports Commission, the deleting of Section 6. That Section 6 has nothing to do with the Medical Practice Act.
No, I'm just asking the medical. I'm just curious why the Medical Practices Act and why we're putting why this isn't in the amendment. Why it's being offered as an amendment.
Madam Chair, the Medical Practice Act study is already in the language in front of you today. This was just giving more details, and so the Medical Practice Act study, Madam Chair, I will get the page here for you. It is on the bill on page 12, line 9, section 28.
Oh, okay. So you're just adding more clarity to that section?
Yes, Madam
okay.
Chair.
That's what I was getting at. I was unfamiliar with why we were putting this in after the fact.
Yep, Madam Chair, members of that are interested in this Medical Practice Act study wanted a little more definition, and so I'm responding to their requests.
Okay. Any more questions on the amendment? Mr. Shepherd, delete line 1.2 to 1.6 and 1.8 through 1.13 accomplishes everything we've talked about?
Yes.
Everyone understands the amendment? Okay, why don't we go ahead and vote on the amendment, and then we'll get back to the bill. All those in favor, I did incorporate those changes, and all those in favor of the A6 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Okay, the A6 amendment is adopted. And then I do have an amendment, but I would prefer to discuss that after you discuss the bill. That would be all right.
Okay, Madam Chair, in light of your time here today, I just want to be sure that as we just walk through that, I will be brief and then for any questions. And again, the recommendations of the Sunset Advisory Commission have also been given to the legislature. in their entirety. Some of these things are technical issues, suggestions by staff in regards to including things such as in Section 1, the contracts for evaluation of agency under review. These are in sequence of the chapters of law, and they are included. The agency report to the commission has the word a priority-based budget for the agency, and the discussions in the Sunset Advisory Commission, there were a lot of them that it was too vague, that they felt it difficult to comply with. They were uncertain. And since then, Madam Chair, the phrase that is used most frequently instead of priority-based is outcome-based budget. And so made that word change there, but definitionally, whether it is called priority-based or outcome-based, the additional information in regards to an outcome-based budget is there in lines 2.12 to 2.24. On Section 3, under Group 1, that is the sequence of sunsetting, having to do with Group 1 are there, and if you notice, the date from 2012 is changed to 2024. And the amendment there for the Council of Black Minnesotans, they will have a date of 2014 because there were three Office of Legislative Auditor reports with serious negative findings, and it was the unanimous decision of the Sunset Advisory Commission that they come under review in 2 years, and so that is there. And the Section 4 includes in Group 2 for 2014, the Council of Black Minnesotans, the Emergency Medical Service Regulatory Board, became aware to us on the commission that they had been incidentally left off and should be included, so they are there in 2014. In Section 5, we have the language as previously discussed. Section 6 is now deleted. Article 2, procedures and fees in Article 2, there is a report, shall prepare and distribute a report to the governor and legislature by November 15th of each year, summarizing the activities. We felt that was just a structure of the Sunset Advisory Commission. This was the very first year, matter of fact, the first 6 months of the functioning of the Sunset Advisory Commission. And so we felt, the Sunset Commission felt, there were some things that would be helpful to any future commission and to the legislature. And so that is included there in regards to the American Indian people and the councils to attain during the biennium. And outcome measures, Section 2, again, it's just restating in variety of places where the different councils would be appropriate. It is restating the same language there. Section 5 has to do with coordinating with the legislative auditor. And again, there's a very important phrase in the beginning on line 4.25, which says, to the extent possible, the commission and the Office of the Legislative Auditor shall align their work so that audits and program evaluations conducted can inform the work of the commission. There are no requirements here. It says, to the extent possible. The commission may request that the OLA provide updates on financial audits or program evaluations that it has previously prepared on agencies scheduled for review. Section 6 is an agency report to the commission. And again, on line 5.7, programs and activities would devote more or less resources to if the agency appropriation were incrementally increased or decreased. Line 5.16, for each sunset review cycle, the commission must specify the amounts must consider for purposes of Clause 2. Section 7 is a report on personnel. I've discussed this with the Minnesota Management and Budgeting Office, and they are able to comply with this by using information that is already available to them to minimize any work or costs involved with this report. Section 8 is assistance to small agencies. This is a very substantial recommendation of the Sunset Advisory Commission that we heard frequent. Madam Chair, did you?
Representative Simon has a question specific to this section.
Well, okay.
Actually, I'm happy to, if you'd rather that we wait until after the bill summary, I can do that too, whatever you prefer.
You can interrupt now, as long as we're
okay. Ready. Just on question 7, Representative Kiffmeyer, This seems to me, and we've dealt with this in this committee and in the State Government Finance Committee, I have a hunch this might duplicate what we already have with the State Workforce Report, which already comes out periodically and has those FTEs and those headcounts, as I understand it. I just want to make sure that we're not duplicating a study that's already being done. And so we typically have a pretty big discussion every year on the State Workforce Report. Have you given any thought as to whether we need Section 7 in light of that?
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Madam Chair and Representative Simon, in regards to the work of the Sunset Advisory Commission, this is their recommendation, but in my discussions with MMB, they have discuss the kinds of reports that they already prepare, and they do have a report that they already prepared that they can be used to satisfy the requirements of this, so there'll be no additional work required, and so it already is, I believe, taken care of into the concern that you have.
Okay. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to Representative Simon, I believe, and Representative Kiffmeyer correct me, but a lot of the times we are asking questions on the Sunset Commission, how many full-time equivalents, how many people were working in these different commissions, and so when we were looking at the dollars that they were spending, trying to base that on how much and how efficient they were, and that's kind of why I think why we want this report for the ones that are under review, not for the whole government, just the ones that are under review at the time that we're reviewing them.
Madam Chair and Representative Nelson, that was an additional point. It's good when you serve on these things together. You have that background and knowledge that it was specific to the ones under review. We didn't want to have to wade through a whole great big report on everything when our work is specific to those under Sunset Review.
Thank you. Why don't you proceed, Representative Kiffmeyer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. On Section 8, very important area, we found that there was a variety of issues in regards to administration, whether they were a council or they were a health licensing board, and that it was the recommendation of the Sunset Advisory Commission that each one of them, if they were a health licensing board, they would be part of the administrative services unit, which is designed specifically for that purpose, and that in regards to all others, the Department of Administration has a special, it's called SMART, Assistance to Small Agencies, and so this section is in regards to that. The commissioner may provide administrative support services to small agencies, and this particular section, it has to do with councils or those who are not a health licensing board. And then in line 5.32, it names one specific to those under review of the Sunset Commission at this time. And then also on line 6.3, the commissioner may require agencies receiving services under this section to reimburse. And Madam Chair, they not only may require, but they will require them to do so. And those reimbursements received are reappropriated to the account. And to make sure that many of these entities already are expending money in regards to administrative services, this is just making sure that they are transferred over to a commissioner. Section 9, disclosure. This has to do with the Health Licensing Board, Section 9. And there is a word change on line 6.18, if the board takes corrective action or imposes disciplinary measures. This is just updating the language here. Sometimes it's not called a disciplinary measure. Sometimes it's a corrective action. In either case, the name and address and so on and so forth, as current statute requires. On the next page, we have Section 10, and there are several areas of failure to report. There was testimony in regards to the fact that not having a penalty, a civil penalty, in regards to a failing to report as currently required by law, sometimes allowed people maybe should be making these reports but are not. And matter of fact, there's that question, and so they felt that having a civil penalty will give a good incentive for what the law already requires, failure to report. So those are several sections that continue there under failure to report, because the subdivisions change. Some are subdivision 1 and 2, some are 2 and 6, some are 2 and 5, so we made it specific to each health licensing board statute.
Right.
Under Section 18, on page 8, fees collected by these boards may be only used to pay the costs associated with the regulation of occupations and professions under the jurisdiction, and that the legislature must not transfer money. And we already have state statute that says a fee must not be charged in excess of what it costs to do that work. That's already state law. If they are having a surplus, then they should reduce their fees. And so the boards felt very strongly if they are at times need to acquire a bit of a surplus because of contested cases. There are times where they have taken a license away or have taken some other action and they are sued in court. They need to be able to have this money in their special revenue account to defend their action, and they also need those revenues. So they do need to accrue a certain amount of money to be able to have those resources to comply with state law and defend their decisions in a court. So we need them to do that, and it's very important that that not be taken away from them so that they are at risk of not having the funds to do that work, and that is part of what those fees are for. On Section 19, page 9, it says how much they can accumulate before reducing those fees. A health-related licensing board may accumulate up to 1 year of operating funds and then must reduce fees. On Section 20, again, clarification here, which is very important as far as their operating expenses. We do have a temporary OET surcharge, and it's just clarifying that when a health-related licensing board imposes a surcharge, they must not be incorporated as a fee increase, but must be made as a separate assessment to be paid by the individuals regulated by the board. It just gives transparency to that, and there's a variety of ways this is being handled. Felt it should be consistent for all health boards. In Section 21, again, health-related licensing boards on their website, as defined in Section 214.01 sub 2, this is just making sure we had testimony and we also had information that came to the Sunset Advisory Commission that we are a bit behind in making information available to the public for public safety purposes. And so this increases the amount of transparency and openness in regards to the information in regards to them. And so that is in Section 21. Section 22 has to do with health-related licensing boards and their authority to provide. One of the requirements and the issues is that the primary business address has not been required, and at initial application, all subsequent renewals to include that information as a requirement. And also, it includes a requirement for a criminal background check, and there is language for that. Section 23, the Sunset Advisory Commission Department of Health Review. There are some health occupations that are licensed under the Department of Health. We did not have the time to sufficiently include them or have them report to the commission. We just wanted to be sure that when the Department of Health is reviewed in the next round of Sunset Commission, that they include those occupations and consider if they might be treated as other health licensing boards and address that issue. Section 24, this has to do with the fact that in regards to contested cases or other disciplinary actions, the Attorney General and the Health Licensing Boards do work together on this, and we ask them to review this and give a report to the legislature of any possible changes that might be recommended to us, and the legislature gives them time to do that work. Section 25 is another report on the information systems on health licensing boards and the best method. There are quite a bit of conflict and issues there. Felt this would give them time to study and make a report to the legislature. Section 26, in regards to fees again, another report that will be helpful to recovering expenditures and to give them time to make recommendations to a future legislature. This was a lot of testimony in regards to this. Section 27, again, a report on the how it is going in regards to use of the SMART program. Section 28 Practice Act, that is one that has been amended with, again, it is there, just some additional detail. Section 29 has fee reduction.
Representative, yes, Madam Chair? Sorry to interrupt. Representative Simon has a question in the section.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Representative Kiffmeyer. Let's see. So this was, I see, we did this in the A6 amendment. Oh, okay. I see now. Let me just scan over the A6.
Madam Chair?
While I'm scanning.
Representative Nelson?
I just noticed here on the A6 amendment, as we get to this, there's a blank there on line 2.1. Maybe that's because we didn't have the section number. Do we need to add that section number? Because we've amended this already into the bill. Do we need to add that section number in there? Or is that something that can be done as the bill's being put together?
Representative, Mr. Shepard, could you look at the A6 amendment, line 2.1, the first line on the second page? Representative Nelson pointed out that it said section blank, Medical Practice Act study, and his question was whether we needed to add a section orally amended to add a section number or not.
Madam Chair and members, there's a command at the end of the A6 amendment to renumber all the sections, and because we were deleting some sections in the course of the amendment, we just left the other ones blank for now, but it will be numbered correctly when the next...
That was my question. So that will be taken care of. Okay, thank you.
Representative Simon, did you want to...
Well, I know we're not a healthcare committee, and that's where it went first. I wonder whether this is something that, I mean, ideally this kind of amendment, which puts a lot more meat on the bones here, would be one that the healthcare committee discusses. I guess my underlying question is, so this is the Board of Medical Practice shall convene this group, and you set out who's going to be on the group and so forth. Well, I guess I just wonder whether the Board of Medical Practice is the best, particularly in light of the recent bad press that board has gotten. I wonder whether that's the proper group to convene this. And it seems like the focus of this is the Act itself. It's on whether the legislature has done its job and whether the Medical Practice Act is sufficient, when really a lot of people, reporters and others, have been asking whether the board itself is sufficient. And maybe it's not a legislative issue. Maybe the law is just fine, but it's the board that has some explaining to do. I know this is not the healthcare committee, and I'm sure you discussed that there, but obviously there was the Star Tribune sort of expose in the last couple weeks about the failure to discipline people adequately. And I'm a little bit worried because legitimate questions in my mind have been raised about that board. And the specific charge here is for the board to convene a group to talk about whether the Act is doing well, when maybe it's the board that's not doing well.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Simon, both are being, there is a process in regards to the board itself. Dr. Bloom, I can't quite remember, from the Federation, they are initiating a process right now. They are able to do, and they have a process in place to do that in regards to the board itself. And Representative Simon, I understand that. I tried to think of, and if you have any suggestion on who might be better suited to convene the working group, also the Board of Medical Practice does have collect fees to do some of this kind of work, and it also seemed that in regards to some of the expenses in regards to this, they have that. And so, but Representative Simon, it's convenient. That's why we added more details here to kind of help adjust that. But if you have any suggestion on who might be better suited to have the Attorney General, I just... glad to have your advice or suggestions, or if I've added enough language to maybe address some of that, that they just do the convening and the work of it.
Yeah. Representative Simon?
I appreciate that, Representative Kiffmeyer. I'd have to think about that, and I know it has a couple more stops, including in the committee on which I serve. I do appreciate that. I think you have fleshed it out well, though, in terms of the details here. You put a little more control in place so they wouldn't be controlling the process. They would just be convening. I'd have to think about that,
yeah.
But thanks for your flexibility.
Chair.
Representative Nelson?
And Madam Chair and Representative Kiffmeyer, what testimony we heard from the Medical Practices Board, and some of the stuff in the article, the newspaper, they answered those questions to the Sunset Commission, some of those questions and some of the stuff that they were reporting that wasn't being disciplined on, which is what, when you have a newspaper story, you hear a very small snippet of it, and the actuality, there's other things in there. But some of the stuff they reported on, our state law doesn't require them to report, where other states require people to report. And if they don't report certain things, that's a crime, but it's not a crime here because we don't require that. So some of the stuff that's commitment in the newspaper report was comparing apples and oranges as opposed to apples and apples. And I think that's what this is getting after, is to try and get at what they're reporting and trying to line that up better.
Madam Chair, I can add additional information on that. Madam Chair, Representative Simon and Representative Nelson, in regards to this, several times in testimony, it was referenced that this is what the medical practice currently is. And if somebody is in line with the current Medical Practice Act, it's pretty difficult to discipline them if they're outside of that, because if they complied with that, which led to the logical work of then we should review the Medical Practice Act. Even though it may have been good for many years, there may be some things that need to be updated to make sure that the board has the power to do what they need to do.
Okay. Do you want to go ahead and continue presenting your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The next section is fees, and in a subsequent committee hearing, we will deal with financial matters. And the appropriation as well is blank at this time, Madam Chair, but this being a policy committee, has recommended that we leave those for the next finance committee, and in the meantime, we are gathering the information needed. And then, Madam Chair, that is the content of this bill, and also there are there is a repeal. The Labor Interpretive Center is a non-functioning board. And so they, at their request and testimony and other such things, and I have someone here to testify to that if need be, but that is being repealed and as part of this bill as well.
Okay. We have a few member questions. Representative Beard, you had a question?
Mark, just an observation comment, Madam Chair. On page four, members, and I know Representative Kipmeyer, I think I brought this up at another stop, there's coordination with the legislative auditor. And I know a couple members have served with me on the audit commission for several years, and I just want to let members know that there is a sense of turf, I guess, that goes with that committee and is bipartisan and bicameral as it has been over the years. And I just want to make sure that you're aware of that, that the usually the program of work, if it's not a financial audit, comes through the commission that many of us serve on, I think 12 or 15 of us. Serve on. So I just so you know, I read that. I notice that it says nothing about coming to the audit commission, but going directly to the auditor and speaking with the auditor who's sitting behind us. He did remind me that fiscal work is within his purview to just directly do program of work. Probably you should stay in touch with the legislative audit commission. One of the concerns we have is that we actually load them up with a significant amount of work. In fact, let me just take a time out for a little advertisement here. You have in your inbox somewhere, if you ask your LAs, a sheet to vote on for the program of work for next year. So be sure you mark your ballot and send that in, members. Now back on the point. On page 13, therefore, Representative Kipmeyer, I'm delighted to see on line 13.13, there's an appropriation being requested for the legislative auditor to add a staff person to assist the Sunset Commission. Thank you for asking for that. I know asking for money gets Representative Quam all choked up, but I'm glad you're asking for money anyhow. Madam Chair, thank you for letting me make the comments. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And if you wouldn't mind, Representative Kipmeyer, I would like to address the first part of his comment, if that would be okay.
Yes, I would very much like to do that. I'm sorry, Madam Chair, did I?
Would it be okay if I put my two cents in on his first comments, and then I'll... You feel free to do it, too. Regarding Section 5, coordination with the legislative auditor, I appreciate you bringing that up, Representative Beard. Since I've been here, it's been a bit of a frustration to me that the Office of the Legislative Auditor does very good work, and they give us a lot of audits, and I've read through many of the audits, as I know many of us have, and I've felt almost helpless to do anything with the good information. And that was one of the reasons behind the whole Sunset Commission to start with, We've got this great staff doing these audits, and then we get these audits that gives us some sometimes very troubling information, and then those audits proceed to sit on shelves and do nothing. And that's why this section is particularly important today. I'm not trying to do away with the work of your group, the legislators that are involved, but I want to be able to leverage the power of the Office of the Legislative Auditor by aligning what we're trying to do in the Sunset Commission and using that staff, since they're already doing the work, to just realign it so that it's in coordination with the Sunset Commission, so that when we don't have an appropriate staff on the Sunset Commission, this will allow us to use information that the Office of the Legislative Auditor is already doing and will save us from having to reduplicate the efforts. So I think the Sunset Commission was, the members in the Sunset Commission were pretty unanimous in support of the idea that we wouldn't try to overtake what you're doing there, but that we would try to use the power and do something with those audits, because, you know, when you see an audit, and there are a few audits that have come back maybe two or three times that have said the same thing, and they were very troubling issues that had to do with mismanagement or other things, and really we've been able to go nowhere with that. And so this is to give, in my opinion, the Office of the Legislative Auditor more power. And I don't want to speak for Mr. Nobles. I know he's here. I believe that they're open to working with us on it, mm-hmm. from the testimony in the Sunset Commission. And if I'm wrong, please approach Mr. Nobles. But that's why I do feel very passionate about it. And that was something that I kind of spearheaded because of my passion for it. So I felt I wanted to comment. If you want to comment further, Representative Kiffmeyer, feel free.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Said well. And also in respect to you, Representative Beard, in understanding the Legislative Commission, that's why the phrase, to the extent possible, mm-hmm. shall align their work. And that's a very important thing. On the other hand, the ability for the Sunset Advisory Commission to do its work and the value of the Legislative Auditor and the Legislative Commission definitely working together, but to the extent possible is a very important phrase to honor the spirit of what you have stated, Representative Beard, and also to Representative Pepin's concerns as well. I think both can be considered here in this language.
Okay, Representative Nelson wanted to comment on this, and Representative
Thank
Winkler.
You, Madam Chair, and Representative Beard. In the discussions of the Sunset Commission, we were very careful to tiptoe around the different authorities that the Sunset the Audit Commission has, and it was more so we want to do this. We're suggesting to do this because going through this the first year, there were a lot of times we had questions, and we looked up, and some of these places or commissions hadn't been audited for many years. Others have had multiple audits, and we just thought it would be helpful to the discussions of the Sunset Commission that as we're looking at them to have an audit that's fairly current that would say, okay, these are issues, and have these issues been corrected, and so that we could ask those questions. And we were kind of, in some ways, because it was the first year this has been up, we were stumbling around in the dark trying to figure out how to do these things and move forward. And that's part of the spirit of why that language is in the bill, is so that we can try and use the resources we have as a state, because as we all know, that the Sunset Commission was given no staff and no budget. And we heard from, in the beginning, some of our first meetings, some of the other states that we sat with that we mirrored this after, they have large budgets and large staffs, and they're able to accomplish this and do more in-depth looking at these at things and getting suggestions from that staff. And it was difficult for us with no staff and no budget to be able to do some of that stuff. So that was the spirit of that more than anything else.
Well said, Representative Nelson. Representative Beard, did you want to?
Thank you. That my statement triggered the discussion I was hoping it would, Madam Chair and members. Yes, I'm aware of the alignment of the Office of Legislative Auditor with the Sunset Commission. As chair of the committee, at least till the end of this year, of the Legislative Audit Commission, which is the legislators that oversee it, I'm pretty sure that we would applaud your work, and we're trying to be helpful here. I'm just kind of channeling my mentor a little bit on the sensitivity to the encroachment on the turf, but I think you'll find I'm not quite as sensitive, or a little more accommodating, I hope, and so we'll continue to be supportive as we can, and let us know how we can be more helpful.
Thank you. And Representative Winkler?
Madam Chair, I'd like to make a motion. to strike sections 29, 30, 20, and 21 from the bill.
Madam Chair, I did not hear the sections clearly enough.
I'll do them in order. Actually, did them out of order. Strike sections 20, 21, 29, and 30.
20. And 30.
Okay. Madam Chair. Hold on a second. Representative Winkler's made a motion. Is everybody clear on what the motion is? 2021 to strike sections 20, 21, 29, and 30?
Yes. And Madam Chair,
Representative Winkler, if you wouldn't mind, Representative Beard, if Representative Winkler can speak to his motion first, that would be helpful.
Madam Chair, I think that I was particularly struck by your comment that as the chair of the Government Operations Committee, you felt powerless to implement the recommendations of the legislative auditor, which seems to me a fairly absurd concept. We are all members of multiple committees. You're the chair of a committee that is exact to oversee government operations, and the idea that you create a commission that doesn't have any power except to recommend, and the commission can implement the recommendations of an auditor, but the chair of the Government Operations Committee can't, is fairly silly, because the sections that I'm striking to me are the most egregious examples of the Sunset Commission going beyond its scope of authority and making recommendations on substantive areas of law and policy and finance that are the jurisdiction of ordinary committees. And for my money, I think this signing the Sunset Bill at all, or this provision at all, was a significant mistake by the administration. And I would rather not pass a bill and let everything sunset than to use this as a wedge to push all sorts of unrelated policy issues through the legislature. And so Section 20 says that a health-related licensing board, when it imposes a surcharge must not be incorporated as a fee increase, but it must be made as a separate assessment to be paid by the individuals regulated. That doesn't have anything to do with sunsetting an agency. That is a substantive change in the way surcharges are conducted. The Health Licensing Board website, this is a long substantive section related to what has to be posted and not posted. And maybe I didn't even get... Oh, and I also like to, I'm sorry, I'd like to incorporate into my motion to strike Section 22, the Health Licensing Board authority to create background checks, also way beyond the scope of the Sunset Commission. And then Section 29, the fee reduction. I mean, that's sort of absurd that the Sunset Commission would get into that degree of detail and substantive policy decision making for all of these boards and commissions. And then finally, Section 30, the appropriation section. You want to appropriate money to add staff to a commission that hasn't sunsetted anything. And it's a joke. Adding more staff won't make it any easier to sunset agencies and boards and commissions that have a real purpose. And we already have an excellent legislative audit commission that and auditor and staff who make recommendations for changes. If we don't like them, we won't implement them. It's a decision of the legislature to do this, and all you're doing is creating a duplicative office to do the same kind of work and basically poke the nose of the Sunset Commission members into areas where they don't really belong. So, and then I also thought about striking Section 27, it's probably not a big deal, but Section 27 says that the Commissioner of Administration has to report to the legislature on the SMART program. If you're actually on the State Government Finance Committee, which is the committee that oversees the Department of Administration, you will get a report on this every year. I've had one every single year because they've actually come to the agency that has oversight over what they do to talk about their use of the SMART program. I've known about it, understood it, and had a report on it every single year that I've been here. Similarly, section 18 also should be deleted because it's silly. Lines 8.28 to 8.29, the legislature must not transfer money generated by these fees from a special revenue fund to the general fund. We do that all the time, and this language will have no bearing whatsoever on the legislature and what it would do in the future. So, I mean, having a report and a bill and a set of recommendations that advises us on how to trim back certain agencies or how to combine functions and so forth is the place of the Sunset Commission. This bill goes far beyond the scope, and it would be better to veto the bill and have these small boards go down than to use this as a precedent for having this narrow group of legislators basically stick their nose into a lot of different substantive areas where they don't belong. So that's the motion is to strike 20, 21, 22, 29, and 30. And if the precedent has to be set to let some of these agencies or boards go so that we don't use this backdoor process of amateur legislating in order to affect all sorts of substantive areas of law, I think that's what has to happen. It was a mistake to sign this into law in the first place. But at least with this amendment, we would curtail your power back to a little bit closer to what the statute envisions.
Thank you, Representative Winkler, for your thoughts there. I do want to just comment on a couple of things you said about me talking about the legislative audit reports. The reason it's overwhelming, Representative Winkler, is because there have been several reports, audits, over the years, and relatively little has been done with them, if anything. And while it's true, we could make sure as a legislature that each one of those audits were taken forward, and we could do a bill for each one. We could hear it in here. There's a couple problems with that. First is that the Government Operations Committee, as well as many of the other committees, is already working over hours to get the work of the bills that we have done. And these bills, being so sensitive, require hours and hours and hours of time. We have spent many hours looking at these, Representative Winkler. And, and frankly, a lot of the audits haven't been tackled by legislators. This isn't just about one legislator and whether or not that legislator is going to run the gambit of fixing every problem in the legislative audit reports. The problem is that there's no motivation for anyone to do so. They do the audits. We get the audits and we say, great, oh, I guess somebody should do something about that. But there's nothing that pushes the envelope to get that done. And we should be looking at that. We should be fiscal managers. We should be making a process, whereas if I'm not here tomorrow, or if you're not here tomorrow, that we know that somebody is looking at these audits and doing something with it. If we're not going to do that, why do we even have an Office of the Legislative Auditor? Why do we have them making reports and then there being no motivation for the legislature to do anything? You're right, Representative Winkler. I can certainly do a bill on every single one, and I might not be here next year, and you might not be here next year, and there might be no legislators that are willing to do anything. But that's the point. It's not about one member. It's about a process, and that's why this bill was so important. And I just wanted to talk to you, too, about the appropriation. This bill was modeled, and I will point out it wasn't my bill that was actually passed. It was Representative Banyan's. Mine was similar. But the point of the appropriation is that the bill that this was modeled after was the Texas Sunset Commission, which has a rather large staff. And as we've all learned, I think Representative Nelson and Representative Kiffmeyer, as well as Senator Bonhoff and others on the commission, who vice chairs the commission, can attest to, this is a lot of work. Representative Kiffmeyer and Senator Bonhoff and others have spent many hours, plus we've had fiscal analysts, at times, all of them down here listening to what we're doing. We've had Greg Hubinger spending hours and hours doing it. And it's while I believe it's a very necessary function, I don't believe it's fair to continue asking them to do the same work that they're doing now. For this to be a successful commission, we do need to have more staff. And I understand it's your view that it's not necessary, and it's your view that it shouldn't have been signed by law. But the fact of the matter is, it was passed, it was signed, and approved by the governor last year. It is, so we do have the commission, and I believe that since it's here, we should make sure it's the most effective commission, and we should take it seriously, and we should do our work to make sure that we are not overlapping services, duplicating services, and that we do have a process to end commissions and agencies and boards that aren't effective. You know, you can criticize the work of the Sunset Commission, and to be honest, Representative Winkler, I was the only member that passed on this. I did not vote in favor of this because I had some overall concerns that you talked about. the fact of the matter is, we don't have, other than this, we've never had a mechanism in place where we can effectively get at boards and agencies that have come into place but perhaps have outlived their necessity. And so we've created an ongoing bureaucracy that has not been reined in, and this simply allows us to have the time necessary and a group necessary to go through and review these things, because it is our job as legislators to review things that we've created. And if we don't have the time in our regular legislative process, the idea was to get some legislators. My bill, Representative Winkler, didn't have any legislators involved in this, save I think my original bill was to have one from each body, and the rest would be experts in the area. So I have some overall concerns, I guess, with how the bill worked out. But overall, I think the process is good and the process is necessary. And I think in order for it to be truly successful, we do need to have an appropriation so that we can get the appropriate staff. And I've talked far more, I think, than I've talked at this whole session. But that's just my overall comment on your amendment. But I'll turn it back to you, Representative Winkler.
So, Madam Chair, I take it you don't consider it to be a friendly amendment?
Well, it's not my bill. I guess we'll turn it over to the author and see if she views it as a friendly amendment.
Madam Chair, I do not consider it a friendly amendment. I just consider it an amendment, and I don't support it.
Thank you. Actually, I think I had... Did we go to Representative Beard? I can't remember.
I can't remember either, Representative Madam Chair. No, I was just going to say, whenever I was making comments... thanking the author of the bill for adding an appropriation for an additional Legislative Audit Commission staffer, then seeing it being moved to be stricken, I was just going to react to that. That's because I know the Audit Commission, the Office of the Legislative Auditor, does good work. We are working them as much as we possibly can. And I don't know if this is the appropriate vehicle bill for an appropriation, but it certainly is one that merits our attention. Since Representative Winkler did bring it up, I will just comment on doing the good work of the Audit Commission, those fantastic blue binders we get, that I have a Pendaflex file full of them. In the 10 years I've been here, I've taken it on myself to endeavor to craft legislation surrounding three of them, one regarding the Metropolitan Airports Commission in my first term, I think, where I got beat silly by my own team, and then two more regarding rulemaking, one regarding rulemaking, which I think is in my fourth year, in a bill that's actually moving through, and I think a couple members in this committee have had some great input on that. And the other one I'm carrying regarding, it's escaping me at the moment. Transit governance reorganization with Representative Scalzi. They are tall orders. Whenever you take on some of the recommendations, good luck with that. It's yeoman's work. And frequently if you come out with a tepid little bill left at the end of the session, that's about all you can get. We try. We have good discussions about them, but taking on those reports and trying to enact that into law is harder than it looks. I guess I'll just leave it at that.
Thank you, Representative Beard. Representative Scalzi?
Thank you, Ms. Chair. And unless the legislative auditor who's in the audience thinks that we don't pass bills related to what their group does, there's a huge bill going forward this year, Representative O'Driscoll's. Sorry about that.
Oh, yeah.
The school trust bill. I mean, that came from a legislative audit report, and it's good work. And I think we do, I think we do take those reports seriously, and we do introduce legislation. We don't always highlight what it is so that we keep track of it, but we do that. But I'm just shocked to get this bill today, because I've talked with you in the past about the Sunset Commission. You had a bill at first, and I was very supportive of your efforts. And then when the next bill came, there were other efforts that way, and I've always been supportive of the Sunset Commission, and I did vote for it. And I think that we're gone far afield of a Sunset Commission, and we couldn't even call this a Sunset Commission or review, because I thought, and silly me, maybe I didn't pay close enough attention, I thought it was actually to sunset something, and I don't think that we have sunsetted anything. And so we certainly, in any amendment, should take out the word sunset, because what we're doing is we're reforming, and we're changing, and we're not sunsetting anything. And maybe I'm wrong, but are we sunsetting anything?
The Labor Council.
Representative Scalzi, I think you make some good points. I did attempt to address your concern on the Sunset Commission. I was outvoted on a... well, I won't say how I was outvoted, but I was outvoted, and I will, as I said earlier, I was the one member who did not vote in favor of the bill, because I think we could have done more. But in defense of the Sunset Commission and the good work of Representative Kiffmeyer and Representative Nelson and the other public and legislative members, I think this is a really good start. It's not where I want to be, and part of the reason that it didn't do more, I think there are a couple of things that I want to point out. Part of it has to do with the Office of the Legislative Auditor. A couple of the instances, the audits didn't line up. We didn't get the audits. For example, some of the audits came out in, say, 2008. We had the groups come before us, and we asked them about the problems that were addressed in the audit reports, and they said, oh, well, we fixed those. Everything's great, and, you know, everything's all sunshine. Nope, not a problem. And we don't have any facts to verify that one way or the other, which is why the alignment comes into place. And so I think it was hard for members of the Sunset Commission to feel comfortable going ahead and sunsetting things, and understandably so, although I would have gone further myself, but when the information was outdated. And so I do think that this is a little bit more of a baby step than I would have liked as a whole, and the other two members that are here can speak too. I think as a whole, the intent is that once we get the process more aligned in shape, I think we're going to be able to do more. I think we're going to be able to look at this, but it was very hard for members to vote to sunset organizations with outdated information. And so I do have faith that we'll be able to make more progress in the future, but I just wanted to chime in there. I didn't mean to interrupt you if you had further comments, Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair, and I appreciate all that. And all the work that's gone into this is much larger scope than I ever thought that we would do. And so for all the legislators and all the staffs and all the various departments and boards and everything that's worked on this, it's an amazing scope of work. It just is much beyond what I thought we were doing. And to add three staff people to a huge government bureaucracy, which, I mean, I'm fairly conservative on these issues. I just don't like to add three staff people when we're supposed to be sunsetting and getting rid of what is not needed in the state of Minnesota. And I see on the Amendment A7, I mean, that we haven't gotten into that yet, but I certainly have some comments on that. But I think we've gone far afield, and if we want to call it a reform commission, then we should do that. But we shouldn't call it a sunset commission if we're not sunsetting anything, and we certainly should not add three staff people.
Madam Chair.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Yes, I just wanted to comment that this being the first 6 months of a statutorily required sunset commission advisory, we give advice, but it's a little bit presumptive to say it's not doing what it's supposed to do when it's only been functioning and newly created. So we want to make sure that our sunsets, if they are recommended, are based upon sound reasoning and that we are careful about that. And I think that is something that the Sunset Commission can be proud of in regards to the work that they have done.
Well, just to this point, Representative Winkler, I mean, Representative Nelson.
Yes, Madam Chair. And there's a lot of things that have been said here, but I know in the beginning of the Sunset Commission, the first few meetings, the two sides wrangled back and forth about how we were going to structure this, and we heard a lot that this was modeled after the Texas Sunset Commission, and it's been in effect for, I believe, 27 years that they've been doing that. So they've been through multiple cycles of all the departments. And if you look at what the Texas did, they also did not sunset a lot of things. I mean, if the idea is that we have to sunset something, and it's been one of my frustrations that I keep hearing that we have to sunset things, we have to get rid of things, well, I think that would be unfair to the boards that we're looking at. I think the people on the Sunset Commission, as we reviewed these boards, most of them were doing what they were supposed to be doing. And there were accomplishing the things that we as the legislator said, do these things, and they're doing that, and they've been doing it very efficiently. Some of the things we found out, they were working, sharing staff and sharing services, backroom functions, all the things that has been talked about in a lot of the committee meetings we've heard here in government operations from the bills coming forward. These people are sharing things, and they're being very innovative about how they're doing a lot of things with a very little money, and which is what we as the legislature should be looking at. So when we say that we're not sunsetting anything, well, the ones that we've reviewed this year are doing what they're supposed to be doing, and from what we saw, doing good work at that. If we're just going to sunset things, we could just throw a dartboard or put a dartboard up, throw darts, and decide, okay, boom, okay, you get sunsetted this year, and the next year we throw a dart, and not do it on a scientific basis. Again, Texas and are looking at what they're doing. They're reviewing the board, the boards. They're reviewing the legislative processes that are going on. They're reviewing the commissions and the departments, and saying, you can do this better. These are things we can look at. These are things that can be doing, can be doing better. And but if we're just saying that it's a sunset commission, we got to sunset things, I don't believe that's the right way to go about it. And if that's the way we're going to do it, I mean, I did not vote for the bill originally. I'll be the first to admit that. I agree with Representative Winkler. I did not think this had to be done. But when it was made law and it's there on the books, I asked to be on it because I wanted to make sure we were taking a thorough look at these commissions, a thorough look at these departments, and saying, are you doing what you're supposed to be doing? Are you not doing what you're supposed to be doing? And if they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing, then we should be getting rid of them. But the ones that we reviewed this year, for the most part, with a few minor tweaks that we have here and the one amendment that's going forward here, they were doing what they're supposed to be doing, and they were doing a good job at it. And to say, well, you're doing a good job, but too bad we've got to sunset you because we have to sunset somebody, is not... The Sunset Commission is not doing their job properly if that's all we're going to do. And if that's the mandate that we think we have, is you have to sunset somebody. If everyone's doing what they're supposed to be doing and doing a good job and not wasting money and not being duplicative of other parts of government, then we should let these things go forward and do the job that they're supposed to be doing.
Thank you. Representative Scalzi wants to come in, and I'll go to Representative Winkler.
Well, maybe then what we should sunset is the Sunset Commission. I mean, what's the definition of the word sunset? Let's call it something else. I don't know. I don't care what Texas called it. I am parochial. I'm a Minnesota gal. And I really do believe that if they did something that worked for them, more power to them. This, I don't think, is going to work for us if we have to add three people, and maybe we should sunset the Sunset Commission.
Well,
or call it something else.
Well, Representative Scalzi, you'll have a chance to vote on and whether we sunset anything in a little while, and we'll see how that comes down as a test case. Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to be clear that I think there are plenty of good things in this bill. The sections that I would delete are things that I think set a bad precedent for the Sunset Commission going beyond its scope of authority. I don't think there's a mandate for the Sunset Commission to require background checks for professionals. I just think that's beyond their scope. That's an ordinary bill in an ordinary committee. Requiring fee reductions, requiring surcharges being separate, website postings, all those things are substantive areas of law. They're not reductions in the scope of government. They're not efficiencies. They are substantive changes in law that aren't part of the Sunset Commission's work. And I do think that spending more money to reduce government is contrary to the intention. So that's why I would strike the appropriation section. So if we could adopt these amendments, I think certainly I would be supportive of the rest of the bill. But I think we set a bad precedent if we basically say that the Sunset Commission can suggest any kind of law change or any kind of policy change or any kind of finance change related to any commission or board that it's reviewing. I think that goes too far. And part of the reason you may need an appropriation for more staff is if you take it upon yourself to look at everything. And if you just look at how to make it work more simply or more efficiently, it might not cost so much money. So I think there are good things, but I think this is coming out the chute the first time. We should keep the Sunset Commission's work focused rather than having it be very broad and getting into area. I mean, I just don't know what wouldn't be germane to a bill like this. I guess, if we allow this to move forward in this manner. So that's why I bring the amendment. And I do think there is worked, there's room for common ground on some of these suggestions and improvements. But taking it to this extreme, I think, is beyond that.
Thank you, Representative Winkler. I appreciate your comments. And, you know, to be honest, those sections were that many of them you talked about, the health-related licensing boards and the surcharges, that wasn't something I was particularly involved in. And I, my opinion was that the Sunset Advisory Commission could make recommendations, and if it's something that we rejected in the legislature, then we could look at that. And so personally, I wouldn't necessarily be opposed to parts of your amendment. My guess, my suggestion will be, and we can vote on it, my suggestion to Representative Kiffmeyer would be that she could consider parts of that, what the points you brought forward. I think they're legitimate points. You could either take it back to the Sunset Commission to see what they thought, if you wanted. Of course, that's not necessary. You could think about it, reject those ideas later. We do have some more stops. I'm not unsympathetic to what you're saying. Personally, there are some sections that I would not change. The appropriation would be one. I think the section on fees reductions, I think that was a very good move on the, particular on a part of the commission, because we uncovered some things that I think we thought were important, and that was that they're collecting fees and the money is building up, and we thought it would be a good place that we could could cut them by 25%. It wouldn't hurt them, and it would help considerably on the groups that were getting licensed on their fees. So I personally like that section. Some of the other sections, I think I'm okay. The appropriation, though, just a comment on that. I think that sometimes you have to invest if you want to make changes, and that's why that part is important, because I just don't think that we can ask our current staff to continue doing what they've been doing. And Representative Kiffmeyer and Senator Bonhoff in particular have worked many, many hours and to some extent taken almost a staff position. So the appropriation part, you know, Texas, their budget is almost $1 million a year. It might even be over. Maybe Representative Kiffmeyer could clarify on that. But over the course of their time, the estimate is that they saved almost $1 billion, and they have sunset agencies and boards, and it takes time to work the kinks out. And so I would speak against the appropriation part. And, of course, as a fiscal conservative, it's pretty rare for me to take the stand I am, probably, but I do think it's an investment that we have to make the commission be able to get the work done that it's been assigned. And so that part I would be opposed to. But Representative Winkler.
In an effort, well, first of all, if you're willing to say that we need, sometimes you need to invest in order to make change, I'm for the mere pleasure of hearing you say it, I'm going to incorporate a change to my amendment to not strike Section 30, the appropriation section. And because of your concern about fee reduction, I'll change my amendment as well, so that my amendment would only be to strike Sections 20, 21, and 22, which relate to the substantive areas of law for the licensing boards.
Thank you. And I'm going to turn that over. I would actually like to hear the opinion of Representative Kiffmeyer and Representative Nelson on those, particularly because they both have been on the Sunset Commission, and I'd like to get their feedback on that. Representative Kiffmeyer?
Thank you, Madam Chair, as well as yourself. But I do think that it is really important here. Is it just an on-off? Is the purpose of the Sunset Commission to just say yes, no? Or is the purpose of the Sunset Commission to make recommendations on better? We took the position on the Sunset Commission that if it just because something wasn't functioning to the best it could be, and yet it was serving a valuable function, but that we took the approach that by improving how it was structured, it could continue functioning and do better. We didn't just take the approach of on or off. And how can you possibly come to that kind of conclusion without looking at things in greater detail? To make the decision of yes or no, or can it be better, does take some time and investigation. As a matter of fact, many of these folks have said they had more time and attention through the Sunset Advisory Council meetings, time to make their case, time to present their issues, time to look at the OLA reports, and the personal effort that both Senator Bonhoff, myself, Mr. Intensa, former legislative member, Mr. Sharon Erickson Ropes as well. We took this duty very seriously as not just a very simple on-off, but that if it was a function we thought should continue, how can it be done better? And I think we defend that. We stand for that. We think that's a very valuable and important part of the legislative process. They made their advisory council recommendations to the legislature. I, as a legislator, and Representative Nelson took those recommendations and put them into this bill. And I think that proper functioning, if they're going to have the function and we want them to continue to have a valuable service, then it should be done well. And some of these improvements, otherwise, I think we don't have an effective use of the Sunset Advisory Commission, and it does have a good purpose. And so I think we did fairly consider that, and we were cautious this time. We were cautious about not just sunsetting. We were more cautious because we felt it was new. It was just getting started. We felt there were some areas of some additional information. So we were cautious, and I think that was a good approach to take. And I think that taking that approach is something that we think a future Sunset Advisory Commission can depend upon. I think that is a good thing. And having more information might enable them to be stronger in that regard. But I think in this Sunset Advisory Commission, first legislative recommendations stand strong and are good and stand before the legislature for what actions they may wish to take.
Representative Nelson, would you like to, I'd like your feedback just because you, the three of us are the only ones that are on the Sunset Commission, and I'm sympathetic with Representative Winkler and what he's trying to say. Representative Kiffmeyer sounds like she wants to go forward with the complete recommendation. I'd like, if you wouldn't mind, putting in your 2 cents.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And some of my 2 cents I already gave here. And I guess some of this goes back to my philosophy and something when I first got elected that my mother said to me, and it's something about when you look at things as a legislature, we should look back and look at all the departments of government. And again, kind of what the Sunset Commission is doing is that whether what the functions of government, we believe that they should go forward or not, and if they not, if they're no longer necessary and they're no longer doing what they're intended to do, we should get rid of them. And I mean, there's a spirited discussion every year about that, about functions of government, and one side or the other doesn't believe some of them are valuable or not, but we should have that discussion. And I think that's kind of what we did in the Sunset Commission on the ones that we looked at this year. With that said, I think the report here going on, I mean, I didn't agree with all the things in this report that the Sunset Commission brought forward. I'm sympathetic to some of the things that Representative Winkler says here about the recommendations of the medical boards, but the Sunset Commission voted on these recommendations and brought them forward, so I'm going to support the recommendations that are in the bill that Representative Kiffmeyer is bringing forward. Because I think the commission did work, put a lot of work into this, and some of these were things that we felt that you could tweak this and again make it better, not just get rid of it if it's not 100%, but these little tweaks that we're asking them to do here would help to make it better, and some of them were to help to answer some of the questions that came on in some of the news reports that so that, you know, these are things that we think if you could make it better and make it more transparent for the public. And so I agree with the recommendations that are on here, and I will support them going forward.
Thank you. Representative Beard?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, listen, this is good committee work. We're actually having a great discussion about why this is in front of us and how we should react to it as the Government Operations Committee. So I'm sitting here looking at health care recommendations from a Sunset Advisory Commission and thinking, well, where do they get off writing law? If I was the chair of the Transportation Committee and they brought me transportation-related stuff, I thought, oh, wait, I am the chair of the Transportation Committee. And, oh, by the way, this bill would be in my committee. And then I looked at the header and thought, oh, well, it has been to the Health and Human Services Committee. So I guess I'm rethinking my position here that perhaps we do want to pull these out, Madam Chair, because if they had made these recommendations and it came to our Transportation Committee, we would have vetted them pretty thoroughly, and we'd have kicked out the ones we didn't think they had any business being in there and probably reaffirmed the ones where we thought, hey, that's a good idea. maybe we should move forward this. So I guess my question to those of you on the advisory commission or the author of the bill is, we got some pretty heavy lifting and some pretty pointed recommendations for health care stuff in this bill, which I got to admit is beyond my bailiwick. So I rely on the people on the Health and Human Services Reform Committee that saw this bill. Did they have the same complaints about this, or did they reaffirm your work to the author of the bill?
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Madam Chair and Representative Beard, they passed the bill, and I take that as support of the positions of the bill.
And there was, Madam Chair, there was good discussion about these very issues, and they adopted the bill anyhow?
Madam Chair, there and Representative Beard, there were discussions as I went through the bill. All of these section by section. We had a discussion of the bill.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess that's what I wanted to know, that people who actually know this stuff and care very much in, with the inner workings actually heard this, because I know if it was transportation related, we would have done the same thing, and it wouldn't gotten out of our committee without that kind of a vetting. So I appreciate that information.
And Madam Chair, I also serve on the Health and Human Services Reform Committee, and have for the last 3 years served on that committee, so very familiar with the issues that come before that committee.
Good. Thank you. Okay, we're still on the Winkler Amendment, and the current Winkler Amendment is to strike sections 20, 21, and 22. I think we vetted it, but we'll turn it over to Representative Winkler for final words.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, I guess the final thing I would say is that what we aren't establishing is any limit on what the Sunset Advisory Commission's recommendations should be. And the enabling statute, 3D11, says that the commission is supposed to make a report. This isn't a report. This is a bill carried by Kiffmeyer Nelson. This isn't the report. This is a bill. But the report is supposed to make recommendations on abolition, continuation, or reorganization, recommendations on consolidation, transfer, or reorganization, and recommendations on improving the operations of the agency. And it just seems to me that whatever the merits of sections 20, 21, and 22, and in fact I'm a co-author on a background check bill that is being carried by Representative McElpatrick, it isn't the substance of sections of the bill, and I'm sure the Health and Human Services Reform Committee had no concerns about those substantive issues. What I'm concerned about is that we're not really placing any limits at all on the scope of recommendations that the Sunset Advisory Commission is making. And if nothing else, it seems to me we should establish that there are some limits, that the commission scope is not everything, because this is a bill, of course, with changes, but it's also a vehicle, and if it isn't passed, some other things happen. Things are sunsetted. And I'm just, if you put the shoe in the other foot and consider being in other places, this could be, the precedent could be set that this is a bill that is a vehicle for a lot of changes in state law that we might be afraid not to do if you have the votes. Or it causes a sunset. So the, you know, it takes away some of the, I think, legitimate checks and balances in the system by saying basically things will disappear unless we pass a bill, and it becomes a potential Christmas tree for all sorts of unrelated topics, whatever and however good those ideas might be. So that's my pitch for striking those sections, just for the concept that we should have limits on what these recommendations should be.
Thank you, Representative Winkler, and we'll take a vote here in a minute, and we'll see how the vote turns out. But, you know, I think you make some good points, and that would be, I think that might be to the Sunset Commission language itself, and perhaps we can work together and take a look at that later on. Representative Nelson?
Madam Chair, I think I heard something there that, and I guess the question I would have for Representative Kiffmeyer, because I know in the past, I've been when I was on the Workers' Comp Advisory Commission, that we used to make recommendations that got put into a form of a bill that moved forward, and there was sort of a gentlewoman's agreement in the legislature that we weren't going to make it a Christmas tree and add all sorts of stuff that didn't go before the advisory board. And I guess the question I have here is, would Representative Winkler have more comfort if he knew that Representative Kiffmeyer made a commitment not to allow or try not to allow? I know we aren't always in control of all that on the floor, but make a commitment that if this becomes a Christmas tree, that she will fight against all sorts of amendments that I mean, this is a far-reaching bill that a lot of things could be added onto it, but if she would agree to try not to allow things to be put on it that would make it, again, a Christmas tree bill that could have more far-reaching effect.
Representative Kiffmeyer? Thank you very much, Representative Nelson, and definitely that is, and one of the reasons why I carried the bill myself was because of my knowledge in working with the Sunset Advisory Commission and the hours that we had put in, and that is what my job is, to bring forward those recommendations and put them in a bill form and submit them to the legislature, and if anything else were other than the things that go through legitimately, that our Representative Pepin has an amendment, Representative Nelson, so I don't want to...
I understand that.
Okay, all right, but that is germane and is pertinent to the Sunset Advisory Commission as well. So, yes, to not being tacked on other things that may be not related to the Sunset Advisory Commission recommendations.
Thank you.
And
I know we have an amendment coming, so yeah. I had it.
And Madam Chair, I guess the question to Representative Winkler, would he have more comfort knowing that, yeah, that she's going to try not to allow this to become a Christmas tree?
Representative Winkler?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Nelson, it does this time. Of course, anything can happen in the future, and that's the flaw in this concept of holding certain agencies hostage to the will of the legislature, and which is why this bill should have never been signed into law in the first place, in my opinion. And if necessary, the governor should veto it to set the precedent that we won't be holding agencies and boards and commissions hostage to the whim of the legislature on other unrelated policy issues. So yes, I trust Representative Kiffmeyer when she says that this won't become a Christmas tree this year. And I would like to set the precedent that there's a limitation on what can come through, knowing that that precedent, of course, can be disregarded in the future, just like anything else can. So it is somewhat comforting, but it would be, I think, at least nice to start the first year off by saying there is some limit, because right now I just don't see articulated any kind of limit on what could be in this bill.
Okay, well, we've talked about this a lot. We've got a couple options going forward. I believe that we'll be able to do Representative Beard's bill tomorrow, since we're only looking at the rulemaking section. I think we can fit it in, and if we're able to get this bill done this morning, we may not have to come in this evening. So perhaps as a roadmap, we could vote on this. We could take up my amendment, discuss that a little bit, and then see if we have witnesses and see where we're at with time. I think, do we have it open until 12? Okay, the next committee will be meeting at 12:30, and if we can get it done, then we'll try to get it done today. Okay, Representative Winkler renews his motion that House file, I'm sorry, Representative Winkler renews his motion to delete sections 20, 21, and 22. Yes. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
Okay, motion does not prevail. Representative Kiffmeyer, did you have anybody that you wanted to testify in favor of the bill, or would it be okay if we went to my amendment?
Madam Chair, I think the time being short, if you'd like to proceed to your amendment, that would be fine.
Thank you. I will move the A7 amendment, and yes, I'm going to have staff pass out an audit report that granted was, again, from 2008, which is, you know, one of the issues and the sticking point. And before I talk about the amendment, I will say we did discuss this on the advisory commission. I was not successful in my attempt to sunset the combative sports commission. And members, essentially what this, my amendment would do, would be to sunset the combative sports commission. As you can see in line 2.7, says the combative sports commission is abolished, and any necessary duties then would fall to the commissioner of health. If we were to just abolish it, it would go to the Department of Administration. I feel that the better route, because this is doing health and safety issues, would be to the Department of Health. And the reason I want to do it is
partially... Chair?
Representative Kiffmeyer.
I'm so sorry to interrupt in a matter, as you're just doing such a good job here. But the Department of Health would prefer that it go to the Department of Administration. I would agree with you, but I'm honoring their input and request at this time. But it's your amendment, Representative Penton. I just felt that I should at least tell you that they may want to testify in regards to that, or let you know about that.
Okay. I just want to finish describing the amendment, and then we'll get there. The reason I want to do this is because I believe that the Competitive Sports Commission has had some major problems. The staffing is somewhat informal. Family members have been involved in the operation. There's a lot of evidence of mismanagement, conflicts of interest, of staff getting tickets for events that they're supposed to be regulating, giving them to family and friends. And I've just seen some overall concerns with this Combative Sports Commission. I don't have confidence. This comes to a lot of the issues we've discussed, in that this audit report is from 2008. I will acknowledge that, but I just haven't felt that they have changed. I think the members of the Sunset Commission would largely agree with me on that, other than the fact that they would rather have more time for the Combative Sports Commission to prove themselves. And we've talked so much about whether or not things should be sunset, and the job of the Sunset Commission. And I agree with what you said, Representative Scalzi. We should be sunsetting. Representative Nelson also makes good points about, we shouldn't just be sunsetting things for the set of sunsetting things either. But there are a lot of these agencies and boards we've reviewed that I myself might have sunset a little earlier. The commission didn't feel comfortable doing that without them at least having a chance to fix their mistakes. But this one in particular, I just felt strongly that if the functions are important, they can be handled somewhere else. But the commission itself, I had some real concerns with, and that's why I'm bringing the amendment forward. Representative Kiffmeyer, on the going to the Department of Administration, I guess we can have the Department of Health come and explain the reasons. And of course, default wise, that's where the functions would go anyway, to Department of Administration, and that was signed off by the governor. So presumably that would be okay. And I guess I'm opening to that. Maybe the Department of Health can talk a little bit to why they'd rather go that route. And as long as you're here, why don't you go ahead and testify, and then we'll have some questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Matthew Colley. I'm the legislative liaison with the Department of Health. And I wanted to come forward and say that the department doesn't have a position on what should happen with the Combative Sports Commission, but rather our opposition is to moving the Combative Sports Commission to the Department of Health. It has to do with a set of conflicting missions between the Combative Sports Commission and the Department of Health. The Department of Health, to put it broadly, is for public health and safety, and has lots of issues in trying to protect and maintain the health of all citizens. This includes things such as, to use an example, traumatic brain injury. We have a registry in which we try to not only promote preventing the traumatic brain injury, but also helping individuals who have traumatic brain injury. And in the case of things like the combative sports, one of the goals on some of those sports is actually to try and inflict traumatic brain injury to achieve success. If the Combative Sports Commission were to move under the purview of the Commissioner of Health, the Commissioner of Health would feel like he would have to basically restrict or not sanction most events that the Combative Sports Commission would currently allow for. And like I said, we don't have anything against the Combative Sports Commission as a whole, and so if the intent is to keep the functions of the Combative Sports Commission, it probably is better in some other agency.
I think you make some good points. I have some questions about even the function of the Combative Sports Commission as it is, as you pointed out. I think I said that in committee, that the whole concept of creating traumatic brain injuries, I think, is somewhat interesting, that the state would, by having a commission to start with, would be supporting that. But that's just a personal preference. Because that is a concern, I'll turn it over to Mr. Shepherd, but the default position was to turn it over to the Commissioner of Administration. So I think I will make the amendment. I believe, Mr. Shepherd, it would just be on line 1.9 and 2.8. Is that correct? Would you like to state that?
Madam Chair, that's correct. If you, on line 1.9 and line 2.8, deleted the word health in both places and inserted the word administration in both places, this would then abolish the commission and transfer its duties to the Commissioner of Administration on July 1, 2013.
Very good. I will incorporate that. Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair, and I wish that we're, Representative McFarland were here, because we've had the same discussion in jobs and economic development, under which the Combative Sports Commission falls. And the discussion we had was last year, because we wanted to trim the budget in any way that we could. And this was a very small part of the budget. And the discussion pretty much went along the line that, you know, these things are going to happen anyway. People, given our culture and many cultures in the past, people like to beat each other silly, and people like to watch it. So given that, we know it's going to happen. It's going to happen on the street or elsewhere. And so our discussion really focused on the fact that since it is going to happen, that we really wanted to have our finger in the pie just in case. And so we didn't cut them out of the budget, because we felt there was a need for some type of oversight. And we heard lots of testimony from the people who are involved, and they said they were going to clean up their act, and we thought it was a good thing that the state would have oversight over this Combative Sports Commission.
Madam Chair. Representative Scalzi, I'm confused, because it was within the hour that you talked about the point of the Sunset Commission. We should change it because we're not sunsetting anything. I'm making one small attempt to sunset something. I had the same problem in the Sunset Commission, incidentally. I'm making one small attempt to sunset something that has had very negative audits, and frankly, I don't believe it's reformed itself. So I would hope that you could support this, but, you know.
Just
from Representative Scalzi.
Just from my discussion on the Jobs and Economic Development Committee, and we discussed this at length, and we really wanted to cut their budget and get rid of them, and we decided there's a place in the state of Minnesota to have a finger in the pie on this, just in case we need to have to regulate something. But we felt very strongly on, indeed, that this was... This was an important thing.
Well, Representative Scalzi, the duties of the commission are just transferred.
And that's fine. I mean, I'm just telling you the discussion that happened in the past. And if you want to transfer the duties, but the state should still have some sort of authority over what happens in this realm of activity.
Right. And I think that's one of the things that we've talked about a lot in the Sunset Commission is that just because we might be, you know, sunsetting an agency doesn't mean the function necessarily goes away. So I just want to touch on that. Representative Kiffmeyer?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And we were, I think it's an interesting thing. You bring up a point that every time you try and do some of these things, the discussion you had about sunsetting, the person or the entity becomes a big advocate for it. And that is why it is helpful to have folks who are outside of the usual realm working with the legislative auditor to give information and advice to the Sunset Advisory Commission, because otherwise you're totally dependent upon the body themselves, who has a vested interest in staying in exactly the way they've always done it, and many times without that accountability. That authority of the state is actually strengthened by moving the functions to a commissioner office with direct authority, because right now they are separated in many times, or they function as a separate commission. By placing them more specifically within an administration, and especially the Department of Administration has a variety of other support services that can be useful in this case. But we did also try and put some other things in the discussions with the Sunset Advisory Commission when we received the report, which was in Section 6 here, and we did that. Because Representative Pepin had her opinion, and we had Javier Mario, who had a different opinion, a very strong supporter. And so we did this review, and upon the review came up with a conclusion. And I think, on the other hand, the seriousness of the issues that are left with the Combative Sports Commission are serious. To just do nothing is unacceptable. And so we took the approach in saying that we would leave it to the legislature to make that decision. And by the way, I also have the Office of the Legislative Auditor, Mr. Nobles, is here. They had a few options that we could do, and he is ready to testify. That may be helpful information if you have the time.
Mr. Nobles?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jim Nobles. First of all, I would like to just say I would like to come back at some point in the future and talk about some of the broader issues. and it would also that have been talked about in terms of the coordination between the Office of Legislative Auditor and the Sunset Commission, which I fully support, being supportive of the work of the Sunset Commission, and specifically Representative Pepin, I would like to thank you for taking a serious interest in a number of our previous reports where we too have shared your frustration about some of the lack of implementation. And most specifically, I would say to the Combative Sports Commission, when we went and did a special review of that organization, I found the state of affairs there extremely alarming. One of the most poorly run organizations at that point in time that I think we had ever reviewed. And even though one might consider it insignificant given their activity and the amount of money they spend and the small amount of staff, it always occurred to me that whoever they are, whatever they're doing, ultimately they are the state of Minnesota, and it needed to be significantly improved. I can't say from our independent knowledge the degree to which it has improved, because as Representative Pepin pointed out, we have not been back there. We have jurisdiction over 180 different organizations that we have to find resources to audit. And so it is helpful that this issue has been brought forth. And in trying to coordinate and be helpful to the Sunset Commission, we did issue a report to the Commission on Monday and did suggest that it probably wasn't the most compatible merger to put the Combative Sports Commission with the Amateur Sports Commission. Even though they both have sports in their name, we didn't find that they really had compatible functions. So we didn't want to simply leave it there, and we put forth a number of options for the Sunset Commission to consider. One of them would be to simply deregulate the activity altogether. But there are arguments against that. And so given your concern, Representative Scalzi and others, we wanted to say, where might this function go where it could be, with greater assurance, performed in an appropriate way as a function of the state of Minnesota? We did lay forth the option of putting it at the Department of Health, even though I understand the objections that have been raised. I would just point out that we also recommended that it go, or not recommended, we laid out an option to be considered by the Sunset Commission that it be put at the Department of Public Safety. And we put forth the options because we were looking for some department in the state of Minnesota that regulates. The Department of Administration doesn't really regulate, but the Department of Health does, and the Department of Public Safety does, particularly through its Gambling and Alcohol Enforcement Division. So, don't mean to complicate things further, but if you are considering options, just to remind everyone that we thought, even though you will meet with some objections undoubtedly, but if you are looking for a home for this particular function, we did put forth the option of transferring the function to the Commissioner of Public Safety. We think there would be some compatibility there. Undoubtedly, you would want to at least authorize the Commissioner of Public Safety to have an advisory commission or task force established on combative sports. But if you do want to move in the direction of eliminating a freestanding commission and move it somewhere, we think the Department of Public Safety is one option that could be considered. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Nobles. Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And certainly agree that there are a plethora of problems with the combative sports. And see, I do want to say thank you to the commission and to Mr. Noble's comments about not putting it on the Amateur Sports Commission again, which I sit on and house the National Sports Center in my district. I know there's a lot of concerns there as they're primarily a developmental agency. But it does go to the point of showing how difficult it is to sunset things. And I'm all for sunsetting the combative sports industry agency because of the problems that it in of itself has. I do just want to make sure, though, that we're not losing the ability to operate in the industries, especially in the MMA industry, which is a multi-billion dollar industry, and to lose out on that sort of revenue in this state for hosting events and such, I think is actually something that we don't want to go down that road. I think we want to be able to house those sorts of events if we want to. And I know that a lot of there's a lot of reasons why we've not been able to, and some of that I think is with the combative sports group, but it goes beyond even that into pay-per-view rights. I know it was one of the big reasons we've had struggles in getting some of those events into Minnesota. So I know it's actually a very, very complex issue. Just want to make sure, no matter where they end up, that we're not closing ourselves off to being able to house the events that bring in thousands and thousands of people. And you know, like I said, the industry, especially MMA and UFC, is a multi-billion-dollar industry, and to not be able to play in those markets or industries, I think, would be a mistake. So as long as we're not closing ourselves off to that, I'm fine with sunsetting the combative sports and moving it, you know, wherever we need to. I just want to make sure that we're not closing ourselves off from the opportunity if we would want to proceed in that way.
Thank you, Representative Sanders. We're not, because the function still continues, as we know. I just want to, you know, I guess all the members have this OLA report, and Mr. Nobles was up here, but just for the record, I just want to say a couple of things that the OLA report says. It says, the Combative Sports Commission inappropriately used tickets given to the commission by an event promoter, did not fulfill its responsibility to establish adequate controls over its financial operations and comply with state laws and policies, violated the state's code of ethics, did not follow legally required rulemaking process. So that's my motivation for doing this. And the function will still continue as necessary. I just feel that it's important to sunset this commission, this particular commission, because of those reasons. Representative Erdahl?
No, thank you, Madam Chair. And this is for Mr. Nobles or not, but Mr. Nobles, is this formally the Boxing Commission?
Madam Mr. Chair, members, Representative Erdahl, yes. The Boxing Commission, as you know, was abolished, and there was a short period of time when we did not have a regulatory organization for that. A variety of other related sports emerged in the market, and there was a feeling that they need to be regulated, and so there was the creation of the Combative Sports Commission.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you've kind of gotten right into my other question. I mean, there was a Boxing Commission, and then there wasn't, and then the need was felt to reinstate it. And do you feel confident that if it's transferred to public safety or something like that, that the needs would be met that were being unmet previously when the commission had been abolished?
Mr. Robles?
Madam Chair, members, Representative Erdahl, you know, it's always a choice whether or not you regulate an activity through a department headed by a commissioner or set up a board or commission to do that function. We have both options throughout the state of Minnesota. As you well know, we do have some boards that have regulatory licensing authority, but we also license and regulate a large number of activities in the marketplace through a department and a commissioner, and do not have a board or commission exercising that responsibility. So we have both models. I think both work.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just wondering if there's anyone from Public Safety here today or the Combative Sports Commission who would be interested in testifying.
Is there anyone here from the Combative Sports Commission that would like to testify or Department of Public Safety?
Madam Chair, I would just,
Mr. Nobles?
For the record, we did meet with the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Public Safety. Obviously, you know, giving a department or agency of state government new responsibilities is always something they hesitate to take on, given budget situations and just the responsibility that comes with this kind of activity. Again, looking around state government and finding a possible compatible home for this function. Again, I look to the Department of Public Safety. They do have a very strong regulatory presence in regulating alcohol, gambling, and it would seem to me that would be the logical place if we were to give them the responsibility to audit this, although I'm assuming you would simply assign those responsibilities to the Commissioner of Public Safety, and she would determine where exactly within the organizational structure that would occur.
Madam Chair. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Yes, and that does, I would concur with the legislative auditor here, that does seem logical. I think the approach was taken of maybe the Department of Administration, as because that's already the statutory kind of default. But we'd like also to mention, to address some of the other concerns, that there is an advisory group established, even though they are transferred over to a different commissioner, and that also there's some other structure, as well as the combative sports account is created in the special revenue fund. Money is annually appropriated to that commissioner for the purposes of doing its duties. So we tried to make sure that with the transfers function also went the funds and staff to be folded into this commission.
Okay. Any other questions for members? I would like to, doesn't look like anyone's going to testify to this, so I would like to move this to a vote. Oh, did you want to testify?
So I see some. Did you move it?
Excuse me?
The amendment.
To this amendment?
I'm just wondering which one you're voting to.
Okay.
Hi.
Hi. Good morning. My name is Kurt Yoakum. I'm the legislative liaison with the Department of Administration. And just for the fact that this is the policy committee, I felt it incumbent upon that the department at least you make comment. By and large, that's to echo what Auditor Nobles had said. The fact that the Combative Sports Commission is a regulatory entity, the Department of Administration does not have a regulatory function, and it's not something in which we're experienced. And so I just wanted to put that on the record that, you know, at least at this point, we're not exactly sure how we would do the absorption of an entity such as Combative Sports Commission or assume that there are duties. And so just as the OLA, when they put forward their report to the to the Sunset Advisory Commission, talked about when you looked at the feasibility of merger with the Amateur Sports Commission, you know, you had to look at compatibility of functions and what is the specific mission of that entity. And again, I would just encourage the members of the committee to transfer that conversation to this particular amendment, also whether or not the Department of Administration is a logical home for that. So I just wanted to make that comment. Thank you.
Thank you. I would just like to comment on that. For now, I would like to just keep the amendment as is. We'll have other opportunities to look at it, and I'll talk to you about that in a little bit more detail later. Representative Scalzi?
Thank you, Ms. Chair. I would move to amend the A7 amendment insert the words public safety on lines 1.9 and public safety on line 2.8 where the word health is present.
Representative Scalzi, I would prefer not to amend it this time, and I understand the concerns that Mr. Yoakum mentioned, but I would like to talk to him more about that because this was the default. That might be an option in the next committee, but I would, you can go ahead and move it. So moved. I would speak against that right now. I've got a few concerns about perhaps conflicts and whatnot. So right now I'd like to leave it to admin because I think it's the most neutral and would like to investigate some of those potential conflicts and those types of concerns before we put that on. So if you'd like to move it, go ahead. I would speak against that at this time, not necessarily later, but at this time I would like to. Representative Scalzi.
And Ms. Chair, the only reason I feel very strongly about it, and Representative McFarland is here now, and we have had this discussion in jobs and economic development, and they were perfectly fine with being sunsetted. And we didn't think that we wanted to get rid of that. Some type of regulatory, and it doesn't, from the discussions we had there, I don't think anyone said it had to be in deed or where it had to be, but we felt very strongly that it had to be regulated, and given the comments that the Department of Administration doesn't regulate, I think that this should be regulated. That's the purpose of my amendment.
Great, I understand it, and we can vote on it. I would ask members to vote against it at this time, because I do have some particular questions that I would like to address with public safety as well as admin. So I would, I'm not necessarily opposed to that at the next stop. I wouldn't probably be opposed to that if that's how it ended up. Right now, I am not comfortable with that for various reasons. And I, so I would like to, we can vote on that. I would ask members to vote against it, but then I would like to go back to my original amendment as amended, if that would be okay. Representative Riddell.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I would agree with you. There may be other areas out there that would better be conducive to looking at this. You know, like fishing is a combative sport. Maybe the DNR would like it.
That was cultural heritage.
Yes.
Okay. Any other discussion to the Scalzi amendment to the A7 amendment? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay.
Nay.
Nay. Nay. Motion does not prevail. We are back to the A7 amendment.
And Madam Chair, I support the A7 amendment.
Representative Kiffmeyer supports the A7 amendment. Okay, any other questions for members? Representative Quam?
I would like a roll call on this.
Representative Quam has requested a roll call. Roll call having been requested, there will be a roll call.
Representative Pepin?
Aye.
Representative Murray?
Aye.
Representative Nelson?
No.
Representative Beard?
Aye.
Representative Hancock, excuse me.
Aye.
Representative McFarland.
Aye.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Aye.
Representative Quam.
Aye.
Representative Sanders.
Aye.
Representative Scalzi.
No.
Representative Simon.
Aye.
Representative Erdahl.
Aye.
Representative Winkler.
Aye.
There being 11 ayes and 2 nays, the motion does prevail and the amendment is passed. So we'll go back to House File 2555 as amended. I know that there are, here's someone that would like to testify to the bill as amended. If you could just identify yourself for the tape.
I was told I had just a couple of minutes, so I kind of wrote it out in a speech. So if you have any questions,
just let thank me you. Just please keep in mind that we do have to be out of the room by 12:30.
Understand.
So thank you.
It won't take me long. My name is Debbie Bowe. I live in Chaska, Minnesota. I am a public member of the Minnesota Board of Medical Practice. And as such, I believe my strongest role is as an advocate for the rights of patients who really have very little opportunity to speak to the members of the Minnesota Board of Medical Practice. I believe there needs to be greater transparency of the work completed by the Minnesota Board of Medical Practice, and that it should provide more information to the public and to board members like myself. I currently only have access to the complaints referenced in the board minutes, and the information that I do receive is limited. I do not believe their current system does enough to improve public confidence in the work that they do when responding to complaints or when they receive other information. I would like to see greater transparency. One of the things, if I were to have my way, would be to have information on their website acknowledging complaints that they received, the complaint number, obviously having the doctor or the facility names being silent. I would also like to see the public record actions listed with licensing information, as well as some level of information about malpractice settlements, judgments, insurance payouts. I would also like to see stronger laws requiring facilities, insurers, et cetera, to report adverse events and employment matters relating to patient care to the Board of Medical Practice. I believe these are only minimally reported today. I think this is also addressed in the bill. I believe these changes are necessary in the day and age of information at your fingertips, continuing to deny access to much of this type of information. I believe it kind of erodes the public trust in the work that they do. I should also state that I am only speaking my views. I am not speaking for the other members of the Board of Medical Practice. I'm just an advocate of putting more information out there for the public. And I do support the bill.
Thank you. Anyone else from the public that would like to testify before we close up that portion? Okay. Seeing none, are there additional member questions?
Madam Chair, I do have one testifier who would just like to make a quick statement in regards to the
Labor Interpretive Center.
Okay. Welcome to the committee, and if you could just identify yourself for the tape.
Madam Chair, now good afternoon. Morgan Fleming, I'm here on behalf of the Labor Interpretive Center. David Rowett's chair and founder and vision of 26 years ago when this first happened. Couldn't be here. He's here in spirit, and I'm not here as a substitute, but here in his behalf. The Labor Interpretive Center was going to be a school and a memorial. A lot of time, a lot of work. A super agency that was an agency of the state, but reported to the legislature. The result of the work was in the summer of 2010, on Cedar across from Centennial Building is the Minnesota Workers Memorial Garden. Our work's done. David Burrell's work's done. I'm here as the Minnesota Workers Memorial Trustee, and that's why I'm in this governing board. So the work is done. So we'd asked the author to repeal Chapter 138A. And so we're the last section in the bill. We're just there by statutory reference. Thank you for the opportunity. Sorry it took so long.
So. That's right.
Okay, any other questions? Madam Chair, we do want to say thank you to them for their good work. And sometimes when the good work is done, it's time to let them go. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate their bringing this to our attention. I think without the Sunset Advisory Commission, it wouldn't have had a way to a place to be able to help this to happen.
Thank you. Any other questions from members? Okay, seeing none, I will remove my motion that House File 2555 be recommended to pass as amended and be re-referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay?
No.
Motion does prevail. And members,
thank you, Madam Chair, and members.
You're welcome. Members, we were scheduled to come back at 6 tonight, and again, I mentioned this earlier, but again, we would take a Representative Beard's bill now, but we can't because we have to do some processing of the bill, and the section that we'll be looking at tomorrow just has to do with rulemaking, so I'm hoping we can add it to our agenda without too much additional time, and that will allow us to have tonight free. So, see you tomorrow. Tomorrow morning, we'll be meeting at 9 o'clock, room 5, meeting adjourned.